Thank you, Lewis. This is the 5th of December, 2020. My name is Charles Stewart. I am the host of this conference. Labeling ourselves as Supreme Court of Law for the United States of America. We welcome everyone to participate in these discussions, at least so long as we are reasonably convinced that you are proceeding in good faith manners and maintaining basically honorable intentions in our community here. And here under, we like to go through, I like to go through the formality of a little bit of metaphysics and spirituality, tradition, ritual, of a prayer to the Israelite God, the God that is also followed by Christians. And if you all might indulge me here in just a little brief ritual here, I'd like to proceed. True God Yahweh Jehovah, we humbly thank you for the blessings of liberty that we have attained in our Anglo-American Christian tradition. And please help us to study carefully how we might continue on with that divinely inspired spirit of liberty and justice and truth for everyone. Particularly, please send your angels and your Holy Spirit to guide and direct us all. Please keep us humble so that we may be respectful of everybody else's opinions, even when we do disagree with them. And hereunder, please help us to carry on with the heroic work that was accomplished apparently approximately 2,000 years ago, according to the legends and the scriptural testimony of your precious son, Jesus Yeshua, the Christ Messiah of Israel. And in his great name, we humbly pray these things. Amen. And I'd like to take a moment to briefly expand on this religious angle a little bit. We do have a link to a Blackstone commentary webpage in that agenda item one that's quite useful. But I'd like to briefly reference the concept of minimal Christian standards of behavior. This is something that I touched upon with Brother Lewis here a day or two back, and as most of you are aware, Lewis does not embrace the label of Christianity. I don't want to embarrass you here, Lewis. I hope it's okay I talk about these things. But I complimented Lewis because, in my opinion, Lewis is maintaining these minimal standards of Christian behavior, and very much more so than many professed Christians. Okay, and I'd like to point out here that you have to walk the walk in order to be a Christian, and that requires, and that is the essence of our Anglo-American tradition of common law, community organizing, and maintaining qualified elector status. So it all really kind of does reach back to the spiritual, religious issues of Protestant Christian tradition. And I don't want to belabor the point, but in agenda item one, I just wanted to expand a little bit on that issue about how it really does get back to more spiritual aspects that our modern secular society frequently is inclined to ignore. And thereunder, proceeding on to agenda item two, we've got, first of all, a call for, is there any new agenda items that people would like to have placed on next week's agenda? Is there anybody that has items that they'd like to place on next week's agenda, including possible court cases? If you've got a court case that you'd like to have placed on the agenda, as we've already got four of them listed in the bottom of agenda item 2 there, and we can add other people and their cases that we will be working towards assembling juries to adjudicate godly righteous justice for your case. That's what this Supreme Court of Law for the USA is all about. We're not just talking the talk, we're walking the walk. We're trying to produce Seventh Amendment recognizable jury trial verdicts. And we believe this will be a game changer. So is there anybody that would like to either bring a new case or place anything else of significant value on the agenda for next week?
Well, this is Joe Gilberti. I don't know about next week, but I'd like to speak to everyone before I consider putting some stuff on next week. So I
okay.
got multiple cases.
Joe, I'm really glad you're here and participating. I do have a section outlined in the second half of agenda item 3 here, right after we conclude agenda item 2, where I'm hoping to do a deep dive with you into what Michael has briefed me about your story there.
Well, thank you.
All right. So just briefly, is there anybody that has agenda items or cases that they are clear in their own mind anyway that they would like to bring forth at this time? Hearing none. A second portion in this agenda item 2, is there any affirmations or denials of qualified elector status of anybody at all related to our conferences here? Anybody? This is an internal process for if somebody's doing something that you discover is dishonorable, it's good to let the rest of us know. We got to be aware. We got to be a self-policing, self-governing community. Anybody? Hearing none. Proceeding on to agenda item 3. As we're watching these items, Joe Giribaldi, if I'm pronouncing his name right, is scheduled to make a presentation here right after I do an introduction to rather frame and link what I believe is Joe's experience from what I've gathered from Michael here about alternative economic systems and how Joe's particular experience with alternative water supplies for people is a good and service that can be used to fund alternative economic systems. But I would like to briefly frame the larger context of agenda item 3 by referencing alternative currency and banking systems and how this relates to our primary concern for this this conference, this Supreme Court of Law and General Assembly, how it relates to engineering economic support for our local and responsibly self-governing communities. And hereunder, I would like to point out three main issues of concern, and then we'll discuss Joe's economic and related issues that he's bringing to the table here. Issue 3A is the clarity of thought in these issues, I believe, that a lot of good, talented people are not up to speed on that study these issues. But instead of any kind of a centrally planned government or banking system being the source of the credit debt instruments that we circulate as currency, similar as Federal Reserve notes, in the common law tradition and the biblical Israelite tradition, I do believe it was the individual grassroots constituent members, a.k.a. the qualified electors, that were the source of the credit. And I think that policy puts us at a grassroots level that even if they destroy all of the leadership, even if they assassinate most of us in positions of leadership here, once we comprehend that the source of the credit is from the individual members of the community that are at the grassroots producing the goods and services, once we comprehend how this economic system is so decentralized, right down to our individual community members, then we've got a system that is close to impossible to being extinguished, and I do believe it's very empowering. And proceeding on to agenda item 3A2, this requires our prioritized economic focus to build economic security and sustainable cash flow for protecting our qualified electors and providing a safe environment for them. And here under, we need to be talking about the community treasury and the community banking system being engineered into each of the township level 10 household tithing groups upon which our common law traditional community organizing is based. This will produce an environment in which adequate economic resources should be available for all of our communities. In recent conferences, I've made the bold declaration that at our grassroots level, the standard of living of all qualified electors will be doubled, and I'm willing to stand by that. And one other final concluding comment before I turn it over to Joe and Michael here is the important issue of enforcement and the funding of the local municipal police officers and sheriff's deputies. They need to be economically motivated, incentivized to convert from their municipal police power, Roman Empire, a form of jurisdiction, over to a common law peace officer jurisdiction. And I believe we can motivate those people because we have the ability to issue credits based upon when we convert to this more righteous form of government. The economic resources will be there to reward them for assisting in a smooth and nonviolent transition over to this alternative form of government. And for reference there, people are already talking about defunding the police, but they're panicking because what do we do without police? Well, if, like Lewis has affirmed with me, a consensus there, the money doesn't need to stop flowing. It just needs to go to people that are affirming their loyalty to common law principles and keeping the peace rather than blind police power obedience to social engineering policy under the Roman Empire municipal form of government. So with those general outlines being articulated here, I'd like to briefly ask Michael to go ahead and give Joe a little bit of an introduction there, and then hopefully Joe can at least start out his presentation by talking about the water supply and how that can enhance the standard of living there in everybody in that local Florida community. And then we can broaden out the discussion from there. Michael, could you give a brief introduction in that line there?
Sure. Thank you, Charles. This is Michael from Florida. First, I would like to just say that down here in South Florida, we have a very interesting situation regarding water. As everyone knows, we're surrounded by salt water. However, in the middle of the state, there is a rich resource of water at various levels. You have the upper Floridan aquifer, you have the lower Floridan aquifer, and then you have something even below that has been discovered, that Joe is the owner of a well that taps into that source of water that is very spectacular. And so what has happened since Joe and I have met some time ago, we have realized the blessings of God have put us together through a divine providence meeting at a county commissioner's meeting in Sarasota, Florida here. And since that time, we have grown quite friendly to each other in regard to our associations of our future endeavor of seeking and to preserve freedom. And we both feel that this water discovery that he has, that he's working on, will become and provide a great source of wealth and power for we the people to tap into and help organize and build our communities. And it's a very special event that happened, and I just want to thank Joe for coming on today, and I would prefer him to describe himself and introduce himself a little more in detail than I did. But Joe Gilberti is the person that will be speaking. He lives in Fort Myers Beach on the west coast of Florida, way down there near Naples. So if you would, Joe, just let the people know what you'd like them to hear.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for the time to speak and discuss what I have going here for about the last 8 years. I'm a Florida native. I was born in South Miami, but we kind of moved to Davie, which is like Fort Lauderdale, the suburbs of Fort Lauderdale. That's the east coast of Florida, South Florida, Palm Beach, Broward, and Dade. It's like
pardon
another
me,
country.
Joe.
Yes, sir.
Pardon me, Joe. Could you speak up just a little bit? It's a little hard to hear.
Okay. I'm a native from South Florida, and I was born in Miami, and I moved up to Davie, South Florida. It's like Fort Lauderdale. So I was about 36. My father was an engineer, a civil engineer, built bridges. He built one of the biggest expressways in Miami. It's called Palmetto Expressway, working for the DOT, Department of Transportation. So I grew up with a government engineer. And when we went to Davie, he became the city engineer of Pembroke Pines, which was like the fastest growing city in the country at the time in the 80s. And eventually we just moved here in Fort Myers to get away from the crowd because I was raising my kids about 15 years ago. I was doing a bunch of schools on an open classroom contract in the billions. They didn't want any more than 25 kids in a classroom, so we had a lot of money to build schools, and there was a housing boom going. So make a long story short, I graduated from University of Florida. I'm a professional mechanical and civil engineer, but I grew up with a civil engineer, so I'm what you call like a land development type engineer. I'll draw the civil plans for paving, drainage, water, sewer. We'll do zoning and big developments. I used to work for like the largest company in the world called Dames and Moore that became URS. They invented geotech engineering out of California in the 20s, and we had 300 offices doing airports, all the islands. I did a bunch of islands. I did Asian Village, Antigua, Azuma Bay. So I do big master plans, but I also do little stuff, little tiny daycares for the diocese I was doing for guys out of New York and stuff. So from soup to nuts, I've been a one-man shop and a behind-the-scenes permit expediter where we'll come in and Lennar or these big builders will give us 5,000-acre tracts that they promise to buy back, and we set up interchanges with the DOT and the back and the beyond with big investors, and then I sell it back to the engineers. So a lot of people didn't really know I exist. That way I can kind of just work on my own because I come into offices and, you know, you end up training and babysitting after a while, and it's just easier for me to move a little quicker. Well, about 2008, I ran into about a $500,000 contract to do a dirt pit out in eastern Sarasota, Myakka. It's east of the Myakka Park. I'm sitting on like a tri-county monument where you're at Manatee, Sarasota, and DeSoto off the Peace River area. It's in West Florida, and it just happens to be right next to a thing called the Peace River Water Treatment Plant, which was a four-county system that General Development Corp in the 70s platted the whole West Coast, and then it fell under. So you got all these platted, substandard, kind of rugged lots now that never really got built. It was just sprawled and dumped on these counties. So what happens here is in this dirt pit thing is an old farmer – for three generations. His dad was like a 32nd Freemason, had dug a bunch of wells on the site, but one of them's about a 2,000-foot well, and it hit like an underground river, but no one ever cared back in 1969. There was no one out here. Well, around 1991, when they started, you know, this bottling, and Margaret Thatcher and Reagan brought it over here with Perrier, they started doing these loop option systems and pulling groundwater and river water to say that they want to control like a four-county area and who can get water with developers. Well, we knew on the East Coast there was something on the West Coast of Florida that was really weird. The Core and Sierra, they would all get these lawsuits, and you'd really have a tough time getting approvals unless you used a local. And we used to say, wow, something's going on over there. Well, I landed on it by luck. And what it is the Gulf of Mexico is a giant crater from the Yucatan meteor impact. And it lifted Florida and everything out of the ocean. That's why we have shark teeth and phosphate everywhere. And this site, some people knew around the world, like maybe the Bush family and some high-end groups like Tampa Central Command, that we're next to what they call a tilted platform. It's like a big deck that got tilted. Well, we can only drill 6 miles deep for oil, and the crust of the earth is about 22. And there's a lot of theories on water origins, and all this global warming stuff is based on ice comet theory. Well, there's another theory where they found a diamond out of a Brazilian volcano holding half the water molecule, OH minus, and it's called Oceans Beneath the Earth. But no one really knows because you can only drill 6 miles deep. It's all theory. Well, this water we have is showing the highest magnesium and calcium we've ever seen on the planet by far, with an alkaline reading and nothing else in it at all. Nothing. And its capacity is endless. I got enough water for the eastern side of the United States. The beauty of this thing is I wrote the hypothesis, and then suddenly I was getting subdued with cyber stalking. I'm whistleblowing it. I'll get into that another day. But these things are everywhere around the planet. So the knowledge under this site, the whole world needs, because they're everywhere. They're hidden. They're little veins, and it's what they call blue gold, and it's coming from the primary water cycle. We're in the secondary water cycle. Spring water is from the rain cycle. That's different. This is blue gold. So it's basically, I've caught them in a eugenics operation over 50 years. They knew. And tap water is based on cancer rates. And when you take a shower, you soak in a liter of water, you get it in your eyes and ears, and that's where you're picking things up. And you want to talk about viruses. Viruses are in pathogens. You got the Pontiac flu, you got salmonella. There's all kinds of things. And water's a lot harder to clean than air. So this thing is kind of falling in our lap now, and I'm getting calls out of Wall Street from intergovernmental Tier 1 groups that, because this water down below, which I can't give anyone those readings, down in the lower end, affects magnetic propulsion, computer, water affects a lot of things. I'm not going to get into the details of that, but the readings I have scooping out of the top, mixing with three aquifers, is basically no one's even close on the planet. Another meteor hit in Canada, and Viola jumped on it. So Coke and these bottling plants, Nestle, they've all been attacking me with the local judges, and I've since filed like racketeering cases. And they've been using a thing called the Smith-Mundt Act that they modified right when I found it in 2012. It was set up in 1948 for propaganda for the world, that the Hollywood, you can look it up. It's a legislative law, and they redid it right when I found this thing. And it's basically legal to do fake and real terrorism on Americans right now for their agenda. They could always do it on other countries. The CIA will use Hollywood to sell a story to the government, and they sell it back to the media in fabricated news. It's big money, big money. And they use it with another agenda, like subdue engineers. So we can go into that maybe another day. I want to stay a little positive right now, because right now I have a permit for a 9-mile pipe in DeSoto County, and it's all ready to go, and we got the funding ready. And this one pipe's going to charge everybody in four counties in 18 months with the cleanest water in the world. So it's going to create a housing draw. And the developers are very nervous right now. Like South Florida, Miami, I presented 6 years ago. I have a 300-mile transmission down the interstate in permit, and I just left it there. It's pretty much done. And Miami told me 5 years ago, if we lose customers, we're reserving $100 million right now. You want to do it? We'll do it now. I said, no. I want the people to open this thing. So we were offered like $500 million, me and the farmers, like in 2012 by Mosaic indirectly through some locals. And we said no, and then suddenly I was under attack. It's unbelievable what they did. So nobody's moving this underground river. I got the deeds. I got the farmers with 3,000 acres around us. And we're going in with like a $400 million phase one performer to buy the lands around it to protect the aquifer, which happens to be some of the Mosaic stuff. And I'm already getting attention from high ends that used to own them. So the county has the money to build it too. So the money's in the tax base. They're spending tax base to fight me. I sued the Federal Reserve, a racketeering. I put Mosaic, the EPA, and Congress. That just left the Supreme Court last week with a writ. They never let me do discovery. You can just Google Gilberti versus Federal Reserve. DeSantis is heading into the Supreme Court with me, and so is five engineers. I was just letting them know what they did and where it's going. I'm not trying to collect money off a lawsuit. And they've been stonewalling discovery. So now what I did, you can Google Gilberti versus CDC. I threw all the circuit judges on every court that subdued me. They were tic-tacking me while they're stealing this guy's land. And they got caught up in a bad mortgage. So I've basically got about 150 judges in circuits, and I threw it in L.A. in a civil rights case, and I just served it yesterday. So they probably got it yesterday, and they're getting them Monday, like 27 entities. And I'm not a political, like, I don't care Republicans, Democrats, this is the people's water, but I'm going to reserve the medicine and the national defense stuff for America right now. And I'm setting a precedent because they're everywhere. Like, the Great Lakes is spewing because Indiana's a giant impact crater. So there's one under there, one under Flint, and I'm setting a precedent to say, look, when we find one of these tilted platforms, and they know where they're all at. They drilled holes for oil for 50 years. We can pull up all the oil well logs. They know where they're at. And I showed everyone kind of the areas. And basically, it's the people's water in that area. The water's free. It's the cost to get to you, a fair rate, a fair pumping rate, and then we reserve the medicine because those mixtures may be unique with this mixture to get a higher level service of medicine and national defense resource. So that's where I'm at with this. It's all public record, and because of what they did to me and my family, I had to do some very unorthodox rants, let's call it, to draw attention. Stuff that I wouldn't, I just did it to draw attention. And I don't know what everyone else sees, but it was to draw attention. So now I can't really fix that. And I got a whole bunch of municipal people very afraid right now. So Mike, when I ran into him and listening to him speak, you know, I said, this is perfect because we're strength in numbers. So I told Mike, well, if you get enough people up and you really want to get the energy into this, I'm doing my performa, and you know, and I can't just spend money. They're going to trust me with money, and this performa, this $400 million is going into the billions and trillions. They have to earn a relationship with me for a couple years, and no one's going to see the best spot for at least 8 more years because I don't trust anyone. Right now, I got 10 spots in this region of the ranch that no one's going to know exactly where they're at. It's a proprietary to our underground consultant. And they're going to get it to the tap, and it's still cleaner than anything ever seen. It's an antioxidant. So if you want to talk about just a little bit off to the edge about some biblical stuff, there was some unique numbers that hit us. When I figured it out, it happened to be April 3rd, 2013. This guy named Jim Murray, you can Google Amps Aquifer Maintenance. He's in Palm Beach. He's basically the secret consultant for the feds for 30 years. He's the baddest guy on the planet. He's my partner. And he wouldn't know because he's an aquifer maintenance guy, but he maintains all the aquifers in Palm Beach and half of them all the way to Key West for years. He's the secret consultant when there's a problem. And basically, we caught Dow Chemical and General Electric did a blue-green algae thing in Lake O. And they were going to burn it for ethanol. Well, it mutated in the air and clogged all the wells in Florida, got the GMO in it now. And that's why I'm getting a dry line permit. So we have an invention that we presented in front of the Florida Senate that cleans it up in a couple months. All this red tide wouldn't have happened It's a fixed fuel. Once you burn it off, it's gone. And the Navy dropped the ball. So we can burn it off in 3 months. So I can not only clean the whole West Coast oceans up, I can bring the cleanest water in the world, and it's going to bring everyone here and move major money, and Wall Street knows it now. And then I'm saying, look, we're going to open them all. All these highways and roads, 1 7-foot diameter pipe, 300 million gallons a day. It does all of Miami's tap. They call this the Florida North-South conflict. Half the people live in South Florida, but all the springs are in Middle Florida. This thing has the capacity to keep 10 9-foot pipes full if I want. So I'm only running two or three, and we're going to try to maybe do a high-speed rail. So all the money moves to Florida because of the weather. Cleanest water in the world with a bunch of platted lots ready to go. And all these lots are mom-and-pop shops because the developers don't have nowhere to go. The land's all platted. So you got all these little mom-and-pop shops that will open up over here. Somebody's phone's going.
Point of order.
Yes.
Okay, if everyone could please use star 6 to mute themselves, and then star 6 once again to unmute if you'd like to ask a question or make a statement. If you don't have the ability to mute that way, thank you.
I just didn't want to keep going and confuse anyone because it's fast. But regardless, what I can do is I can give Mike and the plans. They're all public record. We're going to be presenting to the legislative delegation in Charlotte Thursday. I'm going to hand them some stuff, and then I'm going to do Palm Beach next week. I've already presented to Dade County, Broward County, Sarasota 3 times, Peace River. They all know, and what happened is they built these reservoirs, these big 6-billion-gallon dirt-moving reservoirs that are basically, planned attacks because they can drop stuff in there with drones in the swamp. Those reservoirs become my power plants. So I'm going to be doing a revenue takedown of all the water and sewer and power lines from Tampa to Miami to lower everybody's utility bills. It's like a foreclosure, and nobody wants those bonds. So we're going to probably buy all of Peace River and the utilities that no one wants on the floor before they even know it. And then I can just fire the engineers and make them sign it. Or I don't want to do that. I'm trying to get everyone – I don't want to hurt anyone here. There's a lot of people that were born into this, and they took me on, and they didn't know who I was. And, you know, I want to be humble, but, you know, I grew up with some fast-paced moving people in South Florida, and I learned from the best. And they're a little slower-paced over here, and they got a kind of like a bully attitude. They fill out fake police reports and take you off the street while they railroad the civil cases. It's called subduing your adversaries. And then they made a high-end one with this Smith-Mundt Act on me, and I got hundreds of witnesses. I mean, they did some crazy stuff. I didn't know if I wanted to bring it up yet, but they kept raising my bonds and timed with, like, the Boston Marathon. I emailed Governor Scott Joggin in a fundraiser. I'm out on bond for $500 with Greenberg Trowell's biggest attorney, who I fired, represents Mosaic next door, who offered us all this money. All of a sudden, I email them Joggin in a fundraiser 12 days after I realized what I really had after Jim left, and they blow the Boston Marathon. I'm surrounded by helicopters and Secret Service thrown in a hole for 200 days while they're trying to steal the ranch. So then they did these other things with Parkland. So it's all going into the CDC case, and all you need to do is a water test. Takes an hour and a pump report. Nobody's moving this thing, and nobody's seen water like this, and I'm next to a 4-county infrastructure. So instantly, if you had a ghetto home and you got blue gold, I'd rather have that lot than Mal Largo with treated water, because you're going to potentially live longer, and those lots are going to get redeveloped, and they're in good locations. So they all know the health department director in Fort Myers. His name's John Eigelhart. He's behind us. He walked around and said, what's going on? And they stonewall him. It's a gang. And I'm told by the guys in Washington that Chicago, New York, all of them, there's no group more corrupt for decades than this West Coast group over here, and I just came through them, and they can't believe it. And the most interesting thing that happened, and it's public record, you can Google Gilberti versus Federal Reserve, I turned in the writ on 9-11, 2020, because they like to play dates. And I didn't know Ginsburg was going to die, okay, if she's really dead. And they picked the SCOTUS, and that case has Pelosi and McConnell in their capacity. So that's obstruction of justice. You can't be picking you're going into a racketeering case at the Supreme Court. See, so
they all found me there, these funders, and they're like, man, we've never seen anyone like this do this. We've been watching you for a few years, and they're saying the Jesuits, and they're like, whatever you want, we're ready right now. So I'm going to balance this thing as I'm going with you all and Mike to try to see if you can get a front voice. I can still get the private money, but the money is available in these counties, and it just needs to be rerouted in their capital improvements, and we're ready to go. One signature, you see? And I have it sitting there ready for the public, so I want to give you all the opportunity because I don't...
If I may, Joe, you're fading out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now? Is that better?
Okay. Yes, that's better.
Yes.
So to make a long story short, there's a thing called Blue-Gold Water Wars. 20,000 kids under 14 every single day for decades die of dehydration alone. Then there's diseases and famine. So we have knowledge of where to find these things in days. So I'm taking on the military and Big Pharma complex and Tampa Central Command's right here, and that's the Middle East. So, you know, it's pretty big, man. I got lucky I ran into this, but I got cut off on the April 3rd thing. Check this out. April 3rd, 2013, Jim showed up, did the down the hole video. You can see the scrapes along the down the hole video where the tilted platform scrapes up. It's like, it's right there. You got to know what you're looking at. And it just happened to be 500 years to the day that Ponce de Leon supposedly sighted the peninsula looking for the Fountain of Youth, right? So we heard on Jeopardy, and we're cracking up 500 years. Maybe they got mad. Well, just recently, just about 3 weeks ago, I found out that in 2012 it says in the King James Bible that there's a study with the Geoloc that there was an earthquake 13 miles from Jerusalem. They're trying to say Jesus was crucified on April 3rd. Now, if you look at these funders, they're talking about, like, this could be a metaphor for, you know, the Holy Grail is Mother Earth. You're having access, so humanity has a sustainable thing. We can live with trillions of people now because it's an engine down there. It never ends. It's going from the core to the mantle, and you access it through the large meteor impacts. So these things are causing the outer ocean. It's 10 times bigger than the ocean above us. That ocean's just the sweat. There's more fresh water than salt water, but it's in a mineral form. It's in a diamond form. It's in OH minus, and H plus is the sun. So the earth is sweating water like lava. And they lied about that thermodynamic model in all our books. University of Florida, NASA, they knew. See, he says Buck's father, they called him the 60-minute man. He played middle linebacker and running back for the University of Florida when it was an all-boys school in the 40s. And, you know, he was a 32nd Freemason. And even Buck said when he died, he was taking a secret with him. It's got a history. And I'll tell you, when you see the attacks they did to me and the lengths they're still going today as we speak, we definitely got something. and the funders are here. So I had little kids. I had to do some unorthodox things to keep everyone away from me and keep my head around it. It's been 8 years, and I gave them a good whooping, and this is the people's water. So you guys have a great opportunity to open this thing locally so it has a domino effect, and all the railroads and highways are due. They're 75 years old, and it's just a cost to us. But if we build blue gold pipelines down all these things, kind of like the Hoover Dam, you know, you put the soldiers to work and you let the immigrants in for cheaper labor, and it's a melting pot again. And you give them opportunity. You don't print money. And that's basically what I had on the Federal Reserve. I said, look, you all hid this with the EPA 50 years. We're 30 trillion in debt. There's 300 million people roughly. It's $1 million for every man, woman, and child. Trump should negotiate this down. You want to make Rothschild look popular, then tell them to open up 50 more around the world in China and everywhere else where they're hiding them. There's 1 mile off Puerto Rico. There's one off New York. You know, there's one under Flint, Michigan. There's one under Georgia. They know where they're at. They're in Mexico. They're building a wall. Now we can't go over to Mexico where there's probably better water. So
Joe,
it's a knowledge thing that we have to encompass. And it can be verified basically by any consultant. I have the deeds. I have access.
Joe.
So you can order a water test and a pump report. That's it.
Yep.
one day.
Joe, Charles Stewart here, the host. Your story is fascinating. I'm certainly enchanted. But our general conference agenda here is about trying to bring it to the tangible, real world of making progress and building our communities to literally manifest all the grand ideas that you're proposing here. Do you have anything that could provide us with a focus, an agenda? And we're national.
Of course.
Some of your words there seem to indicate that you're presenting opportunity, but that seems like it's probably for local Florida there, or maybe I think you also said that you got enough for the entire East Coast, which is a really bold statement. But can you help us put it into a tangible real-world context that our other scholars here, we've got national scholars of very prominent reputation here listening to your story, that each have their own valuable insights as to how key elements of a whole new paradigm of responsible self-governing communities might really take control and do a game changer on everybody here. But we need to involve our other gurus in the discussion here rather than just, you know, any one of us talking too much. I yield. Go ahead, Joe.
I just wanted to kind of break the ice. It's a lot. There's no way in one day or even 3 months you guys could catch up unless you had, you know, weekly things and you had some engineers that you can qualify it with, because you don't want to just take my word. You know, I don't need to be validated. The resource does, okay? I've done the surrounding surface stuff to get the economic driver. People are going to want healthier antioxidant homes, and the hospitals are going to be filled with. So what I would ask on an agenda for you guys is first kind of understand the water quality characteristics in the home. Most people don't know that tap water is based on cancer rates. You know, you're allowed to give people cancer in the homes because you can only clean the water so much. Now imagine your home's an antioxidant. What does that do to the value of the home? And it creates a housing boom over here. And if they're everywhere around the world, or if there's some people that are scholars, I would be willing to give some samples at some level. If they could show me that who they're giving it to, because you got to sign some agreements, and it's a medicine changer. So if someone thinks that they, like, you know, Eli Lilly was all over me, I can call them up and they can start doing a lab. So maybe you guys could help coordinate in between if you think that's something for you. I have a resource. There's a million things to do with it. I still need to catch up with what you guys are trying to do. I see where Mike's at, and Mike told me, hey, these guys are smart. They're going to help. And I can't really explain everything right away. I can take in questions. You can ask me anything you want. I can give you the permits, the plans. You can
try to provide some guidance and direction to where we can get traction and actually working together. I think most of us are already inclined to. A lot of us are into alternative health therapy, and we're inclined to believe that what you're saying is true. Of more concern to us here and now is apparently you're having trouble with the government and the court system and behind the scenes money, power, people. And we're talking about.
We used to have trouble. Now the trouble's over. I'm done with the fight. What I'm trying to do is say, hey, I'm bringing you an opportunity. Mike said you guys may need some funding, and I have it all ready to go. So you can basically go in front of these counties and go, look, we have the permit. We have the guy with the funding. You don't even have to spend any money. We want to connect. We want this thing connected now as a united voice, and it's just going to make them pop. They're ready to go, and that allows me to move the power of the resource over to the people, and I'm allowing you all to facilitate that because of my relationship with Mike so far. So I could give Mike some stuff, and let's spend, say, 3 months catching you all up, because nobody's moving this thing. It's been here 65 million years, and I'm way ahead of everyone, and that's why you see me talking fast, and I have a lot on my schedule, and we can, like, set up some piecemeal stuff. So that gives you some in-between time to list out questions and get your head around it before and maybe tell me what you guys need, so when I go for my performers, I can justify who I'm giving, you know, promotional. I don't know how to call this. It's going to be some, how you guys want to call it, you know.
If I may, Charles.
Charles, a word on that.
Yes. Okay. If I may, and one, I need to. All numbers on our board are recognizable, save one. I'd like to identify this particular number. Then I want to make a statement. Then and turn it back over to Joe and Charles. But I'm going to mute a caller and simply and then unmute simply. And I'd like that caller to identify yourself. Okay, you just heard. You are now muted, and now I'm going to unmute. No, I see you, Cynthia. Greetings, you're fine. I'm now going to unmute. Greetings.
Yeah, Rick in Colorado. What's the problem?
Okay, Rick in Colorado, that's not a problem. The problem was that you were not identifiable to the manager of the board. Thank you. Okay, the one thing that I'd like to mention, and I won't go further with Rick of Colorado. I know Charles extends this invitation to quite a large email list. But Joe, I heard you mention Nestle as one of the entities mm-hmm. that's contacted you since this, and I. Would like to say, please put nothing past that organization and that corporation.
Oh, yeah. They tried.
I'm here in Michigan. I'm here. Well, no, they're not done. They're not done. I comprehend you that the money aspect, that's decided, that's over. There can be no, alteration of that. We're here in Michigan. And whereas I'm very interested, and I just did have an opportunity briefly to pull up your case against the versus the Federal Reserve and the CDC, and I will take some time to go over and review each of those. But here in Michigan, where Nestle is basically stealing water of Michigan, just actually got approval by the state to increase what they're pulling from one particular location up to about 400 gallons, I think, a minute, about a 60% increase. They pay a total for all of the money, all of the water that they pull out of from underneath Michigan of $200 a year, the licensing fee, period, for all of the bottled water.
The Bush-Michigan Compact. The Bush-Michigan Compact.
Right, and with what's going on in Flint, in terms of the drinking water, still allowing the state of Michigan, supposedly the trustee of the water, allowing the corporation such as General Motors there to poison the water for 50 years and then act surprised when it then becomes it's no longer drinkable, and the people in Flint still don't have drinkable water to this day. Public water, of course, Nestle is profiting off of that as well. So, yeah, this is an area definitely that we would be very interested in following up with what you're doing in each of these cases. And I think I saw David of Michigan join us as well, and he might be able to add anything as he worked closer with some other people that were trying to assist a man in the western part of Michigan with fighting Nestle. And I believe the man ended up in jail over due to Nestle. So when I say that they're not done, and please put nothing past that corporation because they do not play fair, that's fact. Just want to share that information with you. And then I wanted to open the floor, yield the floor back over to you and Charles and anyone else that had any questions. I don't know enough right now to formulate, an intelligent question to say how might we here of Michigan best, access the resource. So when you say, hey, we've got this here, I don't know if you're speaking specifically of those counties there on Florida or those on other nation states. So I yield.
Well,
This is Cynthia. I would like to speak on that because the esoteric side of it, what we call that is the blue cantina, which was for millions of years stopped doing that, have that water so that they can do what they did to the water, so they can do what, so they can take control of us. And actually, because of the big shift of Terra Nova and Artemis, and they're on like the fifth dimension, which our consciousness has to go there, and that's what we're leaning towards, which is natural law. And we are being responsible for our own creation. So that water is healing water, which water is a masculine energy for healing, to bring the masculine and the feminine back together. That's so what is taking place right now is that big shift. And it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's going to really happen. But the whole thing is, what he's talking about, the Federal Reserve and the corporate government, it's not going to happen through their eyes, because they're the ones for thousands of millions of years, that's where we're at right now, that have took control over that and poisoning our water to poison us and that's keep right. us dumbed down and numbed down. So whatever you do, don't think those cooperation, because we have taken over and Federal Reserve money and all that stuff, it's going to be a while because we're going through our transition. And but if your intent, no matter what you say right now and what's going on, you're going to have, because our intent now is to get back and to respect each other, love each other, the unity as one. And it's not about the money. It's about us getting to a point where we can be free again and be from under this control. So, and it's a big shift, and we're working towards that. So whatever you're thinking that's going to happen and go on, I hope your intent is very about the people and not about money.
Oh, yeah.
But it's free for the people. Right. Because that's exactly what's going to happen, and that's what we're focusing on. We're not going backwards. We're not even thinking about these people. It's a process, and I can't tell you exactly how it's going to take place. But it's a process, and whoever is, like you say, you have patents and all that, no, it doesn't belong to you or nobody else. It belongs to every one of us.
Right.
Everybody. And this is free for everybody.
Well,
whatever our intent is, should always be a intent to know that it's time for us to realize that this is Terra Nova, which is Mother Earth, Universal Mother, and that water is really what we call the blue cantina.
That's right. Well, next, get to the timeline of the CDC, I have it in a vault, and I'm not releasing that for about another month, but I have Governor Scott taking pictures of my people, and they're talking about Nestle. I got all kinds of stuff on Nestle. They ran. They came for this thing in 2009.
Hey, Joe, we can't hear you, Joe.
Can you hear me now? I got stuff on Nestle that is going to be in the timeline of the CDC case. I've left it in a vault so they can't just dismiss the case and stonewall. We have there's 300-page timeline that has detail, and I got people in South Florida on the International Trade Board that took Governor Scott and Nestle's, and I can't even get into what we have on these people. It's major. They're done. So that's going to come out in the vault. So no one even gets to see the vault yet because I was tired of getting stonewalled. But, yes, this is the people's water. And in Flint, Michigan, you got to realize, like, one football field area of one of these tilted platforms, it's endless water for drinking. It's not the irrigation, but drinking water, forget about it. I mean, there may be one sitting in one remote area over there because of Indiana's an impact crater. And they know where it's at. And what I would tell you all in Michigan is this easy. You go over to Schneider, and he knows about me, Governor Schneider. I intervened in a lot of stuff there. I got a whole track on that Flint, Michigan thing because they turned that valve on right when they did the Smith month, and I found this thing there. That toxic. Okay? You're going to see that in the timeline eventually when I let it out. But all you have to do to Schneider is say, look, we want to come in as a group, and we know there's a meteor impact zone right here, and there's an aquifer coming up. We want all the oil well logs right now from USGS. We want all the logs, and we want to bring in our engineers and verify some of these logs. And it could just be in one spot where it's coming up, and it's got to be within 6 miles depth. And forget about it. You run a pipe over to the main system, and everybody's got blue gold. And that's what needs to happen across the world in metropolitan areas if they have a meteor impact. I mean, mine's 400 miles away from the actual impact, so they could be anywhere. The oil well logs know where they're at. The OPEC knows where they're at. Exxon knows where they're at. They all know where they're at. They know right where they're at, right now. and they can open them all up right now, and they don't. So you just needed to know that they exist, and this site proves it. And that's where you guys get your heads around that and grab a few engineers that are, like, willing to talk for a few minutes to ask some questions so you can get your comfort levels up. And I'm here for you. I wasn't really totally prepared for today, but Mike is such a good speaker in moving people. He's perfect for this area here, and I'm willing to fund him and you guys to get the first one open. And then by then, you know, you guys are going to see a lot more. This is just the first day, and we're on a phone. It's very difficult just on a phone. The picture's 1,000 words. So, you know, let's try
May
to
I?
On in the future.
Wait. Charles here. I lost connection for a moment. Thank you, Joe, for continuing on. Joe, I'd like to ask you, before I lost connection, I was trying to drive towards tangible things that our activists can do to harmonize with your efforts so that we can develop a symbiotic relationship here. And I believe you indicated, correct me if I'm wrong, that what you've got tapped into there in Florida is, did you say that is capable of supplying good quality water to the entire East Coast?
Of the whole United States. But why would you go uphill and pump water if they're scattered everywhere, hidden?
Right. I got it. Can we? I want to try to focus on the prioritized points of us working together here. Our activists. You were earlier talking about people going into city council meetings and county commissioners meetings and trying to push an agenda of converting the economic resources away from the normal petrochemical evil empire mode of supplying water and things over to this new alternative system that you're coming up with. Is that correct?
Well, you know, you're going a little fast for you guys right now. What I want to do, I think I can understand where you're coming from. You've asked me kind of a similar question twice now, and I get it. I think what we should do is let me and Mike get together, and let me, when, you know, we're going to see each other, I think, Thursday, and let me get some lists of items that I know that you guys can do. Like, for example, there's some big HOAs with developers like Palmer Ranch. You can go in there. There's 15,000 rooftops that can have this water in 18 months. Their home values are going to increase so they can go get equity lines. They can march in with you. Now you got 15,000 rooftops helping you out because they're right next to my source, and they're getting a polluted river pumped to them with arsenic and radioactivity, and they're going to go to the cleanest water world. They just don't know I exist. And if I walk up, they've got all this stuff on the Internet ugly about me because that's what they do, and you guys can facilitate that for them, for those people. They need this water, and the schools need it, and the hospitals need it. What are we sanitizing in the hospital when the water's dirty and treated? Things like that. Hit the hospitals. So let me get a list with Mike. So as I'm talking too fast, and it's Saturday, and I don't want to get everyone spinning too fast. And you can Google my name on YouTube, and you may hear some rants, and I got to take some of those down because, you know, we were getting attacked. It's unbelievable, but it's real, and we got the funding. I got the permit, and you guys are invited, and I think what we should do is let me get with Mike, and Mike knows what you guys need, and he's going to catch me up with you, and he's a little bit more caught up with me, and then we'll get a list together. And that way I don't waste your time talking in circles because it's a lot, you know.
Sure.
And I want you guys to understand what this is. And the way you're biblical, you're going to really light up at night one day looking at what I got. You just have to ignore my rants and my attitude. I grew up in the 80s, and we were a bunch of going out all the time, dancing guys. And, you know, I just can't believe someone would hide this. And I got nervous, and, you know, I did what best I could. It's just me, you know. And there's people that can present this better now for the people. And that's what
Joe, your idea about composing a list with Michael sounds excellent. I think all of my basic concerns will be addressed by your working with Michael and composing a list like that. I do detect that there are people that would like to interact with you in our more general audience here for another 15, 20 minutes or so, if that sounds good.
Sure. I'll answer anybody's questions. I got nothing to hide.
All right.
Talking about my
May I? May I say something? This is
well,
Cynthia.
I had asked for the floor.
Okay. Sure.
Name and state, please, ma'am.
This is Cynthia in Florida. When you started talking about Exxon knows about this and everything, that all the oil schematics show, all, you know, all the records that they have show this water. So what is to stop the government from polluting this water like they have the natural sources that we already have? I mean, the water that we have now that's so polluted was once natural and pure, and they destroyed it. So what's to stop the government from destroying this water?
God. They can't destroy it. There's nothing you can do to destroy it. You can't put all the nukes in the world on it. You can try to drop poison on it. It'll just keep moving out through the rocks. There ain't nothing you can do to it. It's untouchable.
Now, I
think what about Mosaic? But what about Mosaic? Mosaic has toxins, and once toxins are in water, they're in water.
Way too deep. Way too deep. Mosaic can't get near it. Plus, I'm going to be buying the lands around us with about $200 million, and Mosaic's begging.
Right, but I'm talking, you had said that there's water like this available throughout the country.
Right.
Like, so to be able to stop the government and, you know, like Lewis was talking about up in Michigan, how the car industry destroyed the water there, and, you know,
that's
the
on the
surface. We're dealing with,
uh-huh,
you know,
yeah. Joe's source is way deeper than they
yeah,
can.
Yeah, this is way down in the earth, you know, 5 football fields. You know, that's why you got to have a $200,000 camera just to look down there, the pressure. You know, and that's nothing compared to how deep we go in oil. So they can't hurt it. It's like trying to – can you knock down Niagara Falls?
May I say something about that?
Cynthia,
you know,
yes,
your volume's way up again. Your volume needs
can
to
you
be
move a volcano?
Turned down.
You know, it's like one of those things.
Exactly. What this water is the blue cochina, and it's here to clean up the mess that the government, the corporation, have already done. So this water is to clean up Mother Earth, which is Terra Nova, and her children that's on this earth. And what's taking place now because of the shift is that we're not going to be working with the corporation because that's dead. We're going back to natural law, and we're getting out of that with private, which is giving us live man on the land now. We're taking responsibility.
Cynthia?
I'm talking to
you. Do you have the ability to turn your volume down?
Yeah.
Yeah,
let
you're,
me turn
in, you're
down.
Definitely in the red.
Well, and can we go on to other people, please?
Okay. What I'm saying to you, you ask them these questions. You ask them the question about the corporate government with the oil companies and stuff like that, they're polluting the water. Yes, because those are the dark forces that have took control in doing those things, and they knew that these situations were there. So now, because of this shift, and we're moving our consciousness to freedom, we're getting out of this cooperation, and we're not going to be dealing with them. We're going to be taking control of ourselves. That's the shift to natural law. And we're going to be in private community societies of making our own decision. We're not going to go to them and ask them for anything. And that's when she was asking, so what's not going to stop them from doing this and doing that? We're going to stop that because we're going to take a shift and go to private, not cooperation. Things
right,
are changing
right
now.
Can we allow other people to talk for a little bit, Cynthia?
Yeah, sure, but I was just asking her a question about the shift and everything that's taking place right now.
You're asking the other Cynthia? That's we're not here to discuss back and forth between the two Cynthias. Joe is the main presenter here. And
okay, I knew, but I was just giving you information of what's taking place right now and what's going on, because he's talking about this water, which is what we call the creation of water that you cannot harm, that's going to save all of us now, and it's coming back because we are making this shift. And we don't have to worry about the cooperation. There's going to be a process that we're going through right now to be private communities.
Right, can we move on from there?
Yes, we can.
That's wonderful.
I yield.
Statement. I love that statement, Cynthia. Thank you. That's beautiful what you're saying. It's beautiful. But go ahead. Next question. I'm ready.
Just curious near Las Vegas, Joe. I have a friend, since you mentioned primary water, Deborah Tavares, out in California, who has been promoting it. In fact, she has a primarywater.com website to educate people about the origination locations. And I'm wondering if that's the same basic concept that you're dealing with in the area where you're at.
I believe that person, there's a machine the guy was making, and he came and if it's the same one, because it was a Colorado, it may be someone else, but yeah, around two, I got this in 2012, figured out in 13, about 2015, when they thought me had me, I saw a lot of these things popping up, and Colorado has tapped in me, into me in a lot of ways, like I know a lot of people in Vegas.
It's not the same person at all, because this is a natural occurring, much like you're talking about in the aquifers below, that have some sort of a regenerative property that's naturally occurring through the energy of the earth. And I think this is where Deborah Tavares is coming from with hers. It's not anything that she does to make the water special. It's just special from nature.
That's right. It's they're everywhere. That's the beauty. See, if someone tried to destroy this one, and I'm giving you knowledge that they're everywhere, and you already see people that have them, they just didn't have the ability to put an infrastructure plan and look at what's around you and get it to the tap and do what I was doing there. Maybe people say, well, bottle it. And that's what everyone wants to do. Bottle it. I'm like, we got enough bottles. It pollutes. I'm taking it to the tap. I want it in my house. I don't want to buy a bottle of it. I want it in my house. I want to shower in, or, you know, women are pregnant and they're sitting in a bathtub and it's soaking in them. And 5 years later, their kid has leukemia and no one knows why. And that was why. And it's, the genetics are too, part of it too, but yes, I think that's the same thing. She's in the same line. You're seeing a lot of that come up, primary water. Exactly. That is the same concept.
One other aspect, Joe, that you have down in your area, I had a friend, he passed away several years ago, who was having ongoing water war issues with the county, trying to occlude him or preclude him from getting the water that was right next to his property. But the water there was deuteridium, or what we know as heavy water in particular. And this guy was we find many times, as you have found, that whenever you have a superior concept or located a resource, that you become attacked by the government, because the government has been occupied and taken over by foreign forces. And so they become an enemy of the people, and they attack with a veracity whenever you're on to something that is beneficial to all, like you're talking about, and I certainly applaud you in that respect.
Thank you. You guys are on the same page as me. This is the people's what I did all of this for the people. I could have took the money. Nobody's paying me to do this. Okay, I saw a farmer getting attacked. I couldn't believe when I found it, and then they did this thing to me, and I was like, all right, you guys want to fight? You know, I didn't ask for this fight, and I think they were just so nervous because they hit it 50 years. And in Florida, is based on housing. They think it's tourism. That's just Walt Disney World. Okay, Walt Disney World gets all that money.
You mentioned you had a lawsuit in effect regarding some of this thing. What's the titling on that lawsuit?
I've got four federal ones, but it's tied to 22 other cases that I've spent $500,000 on lawyers. They all go down in the third. So I just started doing pro se because I've been training lawyers for 20 years in development, but I had to learn how to be a processor now in all these courts. So there's Gilberti versus Federal Reserve. That's basically gone, but I can retract it later. They were telling me at Wall Street as I did some things. There's Gilberti versus Ron DeSantis heading to Supreme Court. They all got stonewalled. It shows Mosaic. It's like a 235 rant. That I never did a RICO, and it was like a year and a half ago. Then there's Gilberti versus Ardura, A-R-D-U-R-R-A. And that's five engineers that are major foreign-owned that were – they bought up all the big ones over here on the West Coast, and all those engineers know me from years ago. They all – we're all like a network. And I threw it at them because they're doing the developments. I'm going to probably do 10 more because I'm getting them to jump to my side. They're heading to the Supreme Court. And then I just did Gilberti versus CDC that just has basically every circuit of courts, federal and state, that were subduing me, and they're all working together with certain judges, but I can't sue a judge. I have to sue the whole circuit for civil rights. So I threw it in with the CDC and the World Health because everyone sees that the mask is on the $20 bill. Have you guys seen that? If you take the $20 bill, it's been on there 17 years, and it's on the cover page of my lawsuit. You take the same $20 bill. They refaced all the bills in 2003. You could get the 9/11 tower on the 20 if you folded it. Mm-hmm. That same exact bill, turn it upside down. His forehead's the mask, and you see the eyes, and it says 2020. So it's not China. It's the Federal Reserve. So I threw that on the cover, and we all know the CDC regulates water quality and Pontiac virus and all that, and the ACs in the hospitals, that Legionnaires disease, Legionnaires flu that caused the Pontiac fever. So that's the same symptoms that you see in Corona. And basically I'm going, look, I want to know if Fauci knows about this resource and all this stuff that's been going on down here, because if everyone's going to have a sensitivity of the air, well, it's a lot harder to clean the water. And when they find out what's at the tap and in these bottles, you know, just because the bottle has a label on it, don't think they're giving you that water. We caught these bottling plants using the tap and then only giving the rich the spring. And then they're even dogging some of the rich people out. We found them with valves and everything. We took drones, and the drone got taken away by Tampa Central Fan right in South Tampa. They're doing it to people where I got two tanks where Japan comes up and Sarasota comes up with a barge once a month. And they fill up crates with the spring. Then they turn the valve, and everybody else gets the tap of that nasty water that's got a nuclear power plant spill in it.
And the last item I have for you, Joe, is perhaps Charles or Mike can give you my communication information. There is a big idea that I had conceived of many years ago, but because of the dangers of government interaction and capitalizing on it, I've been reticent to share it with anyone, but because of your mechanical engineering skills related to the same topic that deals with the concept that I've come up with, I would share it with you privately and not on an open call because of the risk to the world and having it stolen and never seeing any realization benefit from it for myself and for the 50 United States, if you will. So thank you very much. I'll be out now.
Can I hear them? Can I say something? Because nobody seems to understand the shift here, what I'm saying. What you're talking about fighting the government, you're going to your master and asking for help. That's not going to work. The shift is for us to get our private communities, and there are a lot of private communities out there now. And what he's talking about is he should go and try to find these large private societies that's for the people, and work with them, because the cooperation and the situation for this is to get rid of the government. The government is the one that's trying to harm us and take control and make us, which we are slaves in their cooperation. So the shift is for private communities. It's not going to your master and asking them for help. It's the private communities, the natural law that's taking place now.
I agree. Those lawsuits mean nothing to me. I'm just kind of blowing. And I'm throwing it in the dockets. I don't care if they dismiss them. I'm not trying to get money. It was just to show everybody things. So you understand, because I've dealt with the government so long, and I know them, and Florida's the hardest place to permit in the country.
That's what we think. There are private communities now that we do our own government, our own court. That's the process. We can get our own society started. It just takes just a few of us doing our own society that comes together. That is a government.
Can I explain a little bit there, Cynthia? I was going to suggest that, Joe. Thank you for drawing it out, Cynthia. We've got authority under the Seventh Amendment and the Sixth Amendment to form our own courts here, Joe. And where it looks like you're spending big money with lawyers and meeting a brick wall in your cases there, it would not take very much for us to produce a Seventh Amendment compliant jury verdict in regard to some of the cases that you're producing there. And according to the Seventh Amendment, that sets a higher standard of law, and it's conclusive. So we've got alternative legal technology that the bar member attorneys won't tell you about, and it's game changers. It's a game changer in the legal realm. Presently oppressing our entire USA, just like what you're doing with the water, is a game changer. So
I see what you guys are doing. So you know what I'm going to be doing, just so you guys understand the momentum you have in front of you. You can hop right on and start off with what you're trying to do in this area where Mike is, and then that sets a precedence maybe when we find another one, say, in Flint, Michigan, and you do the same thing. You're building right now. But I have it ready to go, and what I'm telling you I'm going to do is I'm going to buy the infrastructure, and I'm going to force the connection. And the developers, I'm going to buy their stuff with our groups, and we're going to make it happen. So I need a thing like you guys to do that, because I'm fed up with these government people. Look what they did to me. So I have no problem with what you're trying to do. We just got to keep – we're going fast right now. We got to catch up with each other. And over the phone is very difficult. If I had a map and plans in front of you and – you guys had maybe two more months of catching up with where I'm at, with, you know, ignoring some of the rants you're going to find because I don't know what they let you see, and just get your head around it, and you're ready to go. You guys, I think this was meant to be, because I can't do what you guys do. Us engineers, you know, we're in the back room, and, you know, I got to do other stuff. But it's ready for you. It's ready for this community that Mike lives in right now. And
so now – can I say something? I understand now what the connection can be, because what you say, you have the process ready, which a lot of us don't know a lot of things about that, but we know the part about the private communities and we don't want it in cooperation. So when Mike them get it together, what we should be doing is don't worry about fighting the cooperation, because they don't have any authority over us, like forming our own communities and take control, because they cannot touch us if we fall, because it's about standing in jurisdiction. And you're not in our standing, they just assuming that we're not alive and on the land. And when we get these communities and society together, then we are on the land and we can make our own decisions, because it'd be our, I won't say cooperation, but our society, because that's the same thing.
Cynthia, I totally understand what you're saying. And I'm going to throw something at you, because I know I'm going to throw something at you guys, that since she's talking like this, that I have a guy that's going to come in February, and he's well-known. He's a sermon-type guy, and he baptizes people. And what we're going to do is a video. He's really neat-looking. He's really dark, dark black, but he has light, light blue eyes. I've never seen anyone like him. And he always told me, why save bodies? Well, you got to save souls. The Christians are looking for something very pure and untouched. So you baptize people under this one well, and then you teach them what this is, like I'm teaching you guys, and we go find them around the world, and you pass the Constitution of, you know, all the way back to Mary, you know, what they call Alamarta or Magna Carta, and, you know, our basic rights.
Amity law.
You know, and we're passing it around the world, and we open them up, and that if there's plenty of water and food, there's no reason for wars. Okay, so that's what I'm trying to show everyone. We are looking at the earth. Imagine if you took your car and someone goes, hey, you got a bad carburetor and a bad piston. You're like, you didn't even lift the hood. I have an electric car. So, you know, that's kind of what they did with the books and the NASA and the global warming thing. It's changing. It's sweating up and down. So that's something these kids think in 3D. And the people that are funding, so you know, some of these groups, it's a young, fast-moving 4D millennial group that only wants to do things like you guys. They found me because they want to do humanitarian projects. They said they never seen nothing like it. They've been tracking me with the Jesuits and everything, and they said, it's whatever you want. We just want someone we trust with our money that's going to do it for the people. So the funding group's on the same line as you guys, but I want to see, because talk is cheap. But a lot of people have been going through this thing, and it's real. I did the real thing. So we're going to find out. And it's going to work. There's more good people than bad people. They need them.
All right. You're fading there, Joe. But can we draw your introduction to a conclusion here? We've pretty much consumed over an hour on presenting your beautiful insight here. And I'm anxious for our group to begin working with you, but we do have a regular agenda of a number of issues that are a bit different than what you're bringing to the table here, sir.
Yes, sir. So I want to thank you all for listening, and what I'll do is I'll get with Mike. I'm going to see him Thursday, and through this season here, Christmas, by the new year, we'll have a list of something for the first quarter. And then I'm hoping to close somewhere in there, and we'll get some numbers together and see what we can do. You know, but I can't guarantee I'll close in the first quarter because this is a crazy thing going on with this election, and we're waiting till after the 20th before we close on anything because there's, you know, that's what they want to do. So they're ready to go in this local area, and there's plenty of money to fund you guys in that forma. So let's just – I want to conclude with thank you. This is the people's water. This isn't my water. I'm just an engineer, and I got a lot of momentum, and if I, you guys want to help out, the door's open. And if I can help you in any other way and you're up in your area and you want me to look at something, I did stuff all over the world. You just give me the address. You'd be surprised what I can figure out in 3 or 4 days for you and email it to you. And I know the regulatory stuff in a lot of states. You'd be surprised. So I could help you out sometimes if one of y'all want to call me. I'm not charging anybody. If I got the time, I'll take a look at it, okay? Like your Flint, Michigan stuff, I'm going to revisit. I'm going to call them in. So,
well, what is your number, if you don't mind telling me? Because I'm very interested because I know about the Blue Cantina water, and it's very important for the shift and for the healing of Terra Nova as well, and what they were holding back from these deep states for so long. And I would love to get involved in getting communities involved and taking it away from this cooperative because this is what is going
to
happen.
If I may, perhaps you could forward that information as opposed to put it on this line, which is recorded and open.
You can go to GilbertiBlueGold.com. My phone number is right at the top, my email, GilbertiWater at Gmail. I don't mind. You know, sometimes I know they don't even let some of your lines go through. I got some programs on my phone to screen, but you can always get the mic and Mike and say, hey, they tried to call you, and then I can communicate from there if they're blocking stuff. Because let me tell you, they block all kinds of stuff from me, and I don't even know what you see. They're all over me. They just shut down my whole Facebook today.
Perfect. No, I'll try to get it from Mike, then, because I'm very interested because I know about the situation and some of the things that's going to be taking place for that. And it's a beautiful thing, long as we don't get the wrong people, because they're never going to let – well, we know it's not going to happen because the shift is going to take place. So if your intent is about us going back to be free and natural law, is really good because that water belonged to everybody, basically. Well, whoever the engineer is, money going to be made from it. But the main concern.
If we might continue on here, I'd like to thank you, Joe. Are you is there anything else that you wanted to say in concluding here, Joe?
No. I'll be in touch through Mike, and I want to thank you all, and I'm gonna go ahead and hang up if that's okay.
Sure. I think we there are a few people here skilled in economics. I'd like to try to continue on with a little bit of economic discussion as to kind of segue what you're presenting to the table into our alternative economic system so that we've got continuity and we can talk about how we might harmonize with the energies that you're bringing to the table here a little bit.
Well, like I said, let me get with Mike, and he gave me somewhat of an idea that you guys are looking for, and it sounds like we need some a little bit of flow to present and buy, you know, get rooms of people, and what, you know, that's what I got to talk to Mike about. So if there's an economic element that helps us build, then you know, I got to just understand everything everybody's doing. And there was only like 8 people on this list, so I mean, I don't care if. As you say, it's recorded. If someone, you guys wanted to call me, I mean, Mike's got my number.
All right.
So, outside of that, on the economic, it's hard for me to really understand how to answer that question yet.
Well, maybe our economics gurus can plug in a few things. I didn't mean to entangle you in any more discussion than you're comfortable with here, Joe.
I didn't want to promise someone I'm going to give someone money, and I don't even know what the money's for, and, you know, I got to
Right.
You know,
I mean, I don't think
I don't want to say things like and let you down.
Right. You know? Right. I think we all we're being realistic about that. So I think that's no concern. And if you got to run, we wish you well. We hope you can come back sometime soon, and we look forward to working with you. But we'll continue on with our discussion here, even if you've got to leave, sir.
Yeah, the only reason I'm going to go is because my wife and them are sitting here, and we're going to go out to dinner tonight. So I didn't know. I thought it was like 15 minutes. I didn't mean to talk so much. But, Well, I'm going to tap into you guys more often because Mike, I need Mike. And Mike's got momentum down here, and we've talked about that. So you guys seem really smart, like Mike said. So I'm real happy to even be talking in this conversation. You guys picked up on it a lot quicker than most. But there's a lot more I haven't told you that you got to catch up with, and you'll enlighten you. It's going to open you up. I've seen people just light up on this thing.
I'm sure your words are true, but we heard a lot of bold promises before, brother. So
yeah,
right.
Hey, validate the resource. That would be. I always tell everyone, look, don't try to validate. Engineer and validate the resource.
There's hundreds of potential resources that can help.
But I will tell you this. I will tell you this. The number one consultant over there in Palm Beach, he said that there's nothing on the planet.
Can anybody hear me? I've got a point of order.
Yeah, he said there's nothing on the planet.
Can anybody hear me? I've got a point of order.
Yeah, identify yourself. Point of order.
This is David Scheid.
David, go ahead.
I've been listening. I came in late, so I missed some of the stuff, and everybody's been talking about water. And I was wondering, I don't have my agenda here in front of me, but is this on the agenda? I've heard.
Yes, it was, David. I'm sorry you came in late. I'm sorry you don't have your agenda.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That's all I needed. Thank you.
Okay.
Are there any other
I'll leave with this, Charles, that the guy Jim Murray, who basically maintains all of Palm Beach County's water supply aquifers and all the way to Key West, he's the baddest guy. He basically told us there's no water even close on the planet. He's drilled oil three-quarters of the world for 50 years. Okay, so his wife is president of USGS for the Department of Interior. No one's even seen water even close. In fact, I tell everyone, if you can find water even close to this in quality, I'll give you 100 acres. Because I'll go over to that site and I'll put a pipeline on it. And I'll get my 100 acres back, you know, in a different way. So that's what you need to see on this. The readings are it. And I only gave you the readings at top of pipe. I didn't give you the real big ones that are for the military. In fact, I have a picture of a National Guard map of all these wells in the United States, and these are the only four, and it says clean water that I got on inside from the National Guard. So during the Cold War days. So this a very serious site. Tampa Central Command's been watching it for them. So you guys get your head around it. It's a big one, and I appreciate it.
Well, we got a lot of things to get our head around, Joe. I appreciate what you're bringing to the table, but a lot of us are concerned about this coronavirus military police state that's coming at us and the election fraud, and we are happy to receive your positive energy here. But a lot of us are focusing on the big issues of survival of America a lot of us are not going to be able to immerse ourselves in the study of your particular area of research here, brother.
I understand. Hey, check out that $20 bill. The mask is on the 20, so they.
I saw it on your PDF. That is an impressive little.
Crazy. Why aren't they talking about that? So Biden and
right.
Trump. What happened? All right. Y'all. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Michael. Do you have any concluding comments here, Michael?
Not really, Charles. I just wanted to thank Joe, and it's a very intriguing project that we have going on down here, and it is going to eventually result in funding for our efforts of creating local communities, assemblies, county congress, and it's time. It's an idea whose time has come. And it's going to be very interesting. That's all I have to say. Thank you, Charles.
All right. It looks like we lost John Root. He is a talented fellow that is very skilled in economics, and I was hoping to get his opinion about how all of this might fit together in the alternative economic systems that John has spent so much time attempting to engineer. But it looks like we lost John. So here, Ender, I guess we should probably broaden out the discussion for other people's questions and comments about how this might fit into our agenda of both alternative economic systems and promoting the broad-based revolution, nonviolent, that converting to common law, responsible self-government. I think that would be a good segue to kind of de-escalate from the intensity of John's presentation here and return to our general theme. Anybody here have comments or questions on that? Can anybody hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
We hear you.
Okay.
Loud and clear.
Okay.
There are a couple of people that have got themselves muted.
Yeah, I, yes. Let me, did I unmute Cynthia? Meant to unmute her.
Yeah, but she looked like she muted herself.
Okay.
Back, so apparently no comment there. Or no questions.
Okay. It looks kind of like. Okay. Well, I guess we lost John Root. We've got Chris Cave. We lost. We lost also Paul Nally. Paul was with us for a while too. He didn't get a chance to talk.
If I may.
Michael, yes.
Is there any way you could call or email those
no,
two
no,
gentlemen?
No. What gentleman?
Paul Nally, the two gentlemen you just mentioned, and John.
No, we don't go reaching out to people. If they don't show, then, yeah, it's not that critical. We've got the brain power to carry on a decent conversation here by ourselves. We don't got to go searching for people to have good, healthy discussion here. Thank you for the thought, though, Michael. Rick from Colorado is rather a new element in our discussions here. I'd like to ask Rick if he's got any particular thoughts on how the conversation has developed so far. Rick, would you care to contribute a little bit? Are you there, Rick? Are you muted? Well, he must be away from the phone or something. Kathy in Ohio, I think you're rather new with our discussions here. Kathy, would you care to share comments about how the discussion has gone so far? Any questions, ideas? Apparently not. Well, okay. That was really a significant discussion that we had there with Joe, and I thought there might be a little bit more follow-up.
This is Cynthia. I know you said I was talking too much, but I would like to say something about that because Joe made a very – because this water, this is a long time coming for us, for our healing and everything else. I'm not really sure exactly how he's putting it together, but my concern was I think it's because it's Conchina, it's the water of Conchina, it's going to happen, and we can play a major part in that and do it in our like private society without going through the cooperation and just taking control of our water ourselves because you know they want to poison the water and stuff like that. So I believe what Joe has to offer, we need to really take a good look at that. And since he's going through Mike or whatever, take a good look at that and see how we can convert it into helping him do so on a private side, away from the cooperation. And this can be global and worldwide because this water is global and worldwide because it's from, Mother Earth, but Terra Nova and Artemis. And it's going to take place. And we can play a big role in it for this shift to start making it happen. And we can be a part of that because it's about our journey and being free and being healthy as well. We don't know the power that we do have. Like you were saying, the Seventh Amendment in our own society, we don't have to act anyone because we're doing the same thing that they're doing. So Joe presenting himself tonight was very, very unique to me because I knew about the Blue Conchina for many years spiritually and everything, but I didn't know when it was going to take place, and this is the time now for it to be revealed. So we can play a role in it or not, but it's going to happen. But it's good to listen to what he has to say if we want to move forward, because it's really a beautiful thing taking place for humanity right now. But it's about our intent. I don't know what his intent is or anything like that, but it's not about making money, but for us to become healthy again and get the nutrition and stuff and stop being misled and controlled. I yield.
If I may, Michael in Florida. Cynthia, your volume is extremely high.
So, well, I keep putting it down. It keeps going up and down. Yes, it's up again.
Well, it's to be honest with you, it's annoying because we have to turn our volumes down for you.
Yeah, I got it turned down now. It sounds better.
No, it's very loud. It's booming.
It's still loud?
Yes, it's very loud. We really
what about now?
Problem. Yeah, it's very loud.
Oh, wow. Now I can't even hear you guys. But yeah, I'm probably going to have to, I'm sorry about that. I'm probably going to have to start using the phone like you said before, but I thought the last conference that I was on when I had turned it down, it was better.
No.
But I just wanted to say, I think, Joe, if we look into it, because it's going to take place, because the water is a healing water for the land and for us. And it's going to be released. And
okay.
Be a part of it. I yield.
Thank you, Cynthia. Can we move on?
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, let's move on, please. Thank you.
If there's no concluding comments on our economic issues or building on Joe's presentation in Agenda Item 3, I'm considering moving on to Agenda Item 4. One last call for discussion on Agenda Item 3. Is there anybody that wanted to discuss general economics or Joe any further? Hearing none. I would like to think that I was going to go to Agenda Item 4, but now as I'm thinking about Agenda Item 3, in the document that's web linked there, my alternative economic systems document that's incomplete, 9 pages, there's a section in there where I talk about economically incentivizing grassroots people by giving them credits drawn on the county treasury to appear in county commissioners' meetings, and to then under pressure the county commissioners to convert to more responsible and accountable governmental policies. And I can't help but think that the way Joe was talking there, it sounds like the agenda that he was moving forward with would have a use for people showing up in county commissioners' meetings and things like that to help pressure for diverting funding, apparently, from the normal petrochemical water sources over to this more natural, organic, and healthy water source. But to my visualization, that would be just a minority subset of the larger issue of when we have a group of people move in to a county commissioner's meeting. That would be a minority subset for Joe's alternative water agenda. The major issue would be to convert the form of county commissioners, form of government or supervisors, from their municipal mode of governing and over to the organic, accountable form of county court model of governing, where the county governing body is the elected chief spokespersons for each of the precincts that exist within that county governmental system. See, in order for me to get behind an agenda such as Joe's,
it would have to be a subset of that larger issue of, and the one might happen before the other. Joe's subset might happen before conversion to common law jurisdiction happened, but we need to be moving forward with all of them at the same time. And at that point, it doesn't matter which one breaks first through, but as long as we've got progress happening in at least one of the numerous agenda items that we're placing before county commissioners, then we've got enthusiasm to move forward with our group and to attend next time. And plugging into the economics, we can promise people economic rewards and maybe even deliver them in actuality. It sounds like Joe might have access to funds. If we can have access to funds to actually give people $50 or something to attend these county commissioners' meetings with us, within three meetings we could probably take over the county and convert it to a much more organic, accountable system here. So I just wanted to kind of lay those things on the table before we go on to agenda item four here. Was there comments or questions on what I've just mentioned here?
Yes, I may.
Yeah, Michael.
Not on exactly what you mentioned, but I did want to leave this information for everyone. It's regarding localism, creating local self-communities, self-reliant communities. It's a website, very interesting website, called Institute for Local Self-Reliance. It's the web address is ilsr.org. ilsr.org. Very interesting site. Just a brief about the Institute for Local Self-Reliance has a vision of thriving, diverse, equitable communities. To reach this vision, we build local power to fight corporate control. And I'll leave it at that. I yield. Thank you.
If I may briefly, Charles.
Yes.
John has rejoined us. But I don't know how much of Joe's presentation he heard. So, I yield.
All right, well,
I heard a lot.
And did you, John?
Please
share your ideas, John.
Yeah, I had to deal with the power outage and get the generator going. Anyway, the structured water that he's talking about way down underneath the earth, I mean, we know so little about the earth that, and there are so many false ideas out there, that this is a very, from my point of view, it's a very worthwhile thing to be pursuing. And since he wants to make sure that it's a resource that benefits the people generally, of course it's necessary for us to establish a way in which the people can take responsibility for our self-governance. And so the important thing to understand is that the sovereign, and if it's going to be we the people who are the sovereign issues the currency. And the sovereign issues the currency in order to create the conditions in which the people live. So in the existing system, the sovereign issues the currency so that we're paying tribute to the hidden sovereign and we're all debt and wage slaves. And William Spademan has developed the common good payment system that allows us to be seamlessly integrated into the existing system so there's no issues and we're not challenging the de facto and we learn how to issue money. And because we can issue money to represent the value of the things that are actually valuable instead of wanting the money, we want the money to facilitate the development of a resource like the structured water that he's talking about. So creating our common law courts and doing all the things that the USA Republic and the, I can't remember what Charles calls his organization. Sorry, that's really dumb. But anyway, the point is that the main thing that we need to do, and the water could be a major incentive to do it, but the main thing that we need to do is establish the local communities. So I'm thinking I should go down to Florida and, help get that whole thing going, both the common law court and the qualified electors and the general assembly and all of that, and as well get the common good payment system going so that we have the basis for making sure that it's the people who benefit from the natural resource that he's talking about. I yield.
Can I say something? That was beautiful. That's exactly, I guess he just knows, speak better than I do, but that's exactly what I was saying about 30 minutes ago. That is exactly what needs to be done. That is
exactly. So Charles and I have been talking for years, and what he's doing and what I'm doing and joining forces more and more is what I call, or what Jefferson called, the Ward Republic. And the authority of the people is always the what happens in the face-to-face meeting when the people, whoever they are, wherever they are, but preferably in a place like down there in Florida where all this water could be initially accessed, when they're talking with each other about how the world should be, you know, the better world that we all know in our hearts is possible, as soon as we're talking about that, guess what? Everything that we need, all of it, everything that we need to make a just and sustainable abundance for everyone is available. And if we ignore the cabal, if we ignore the banking system, if we ignore the corrupt government, if we ignore all of that and go about creating what it is that we want, then we succeed. And all the people that he mentioned, the network of engineers and the people who know about all of this, I believe that as soon as they see a practical way to create self-conscious communities of people wanting to create what it is that they know in their hearts is possible, this thing will take off. And I think you'll have confidence that once we get something like that going, that it would be responsible to turn the process over to a real Jural Assembly. So I'm very, very interested and very pleased with what he's been talking about, and I yield.
Thank you, John. Are you seriously entertaining maybe taking a trip down there to Florida to look around a little bit?
Yes. Yeah, I have to. My wife is recovering from knee replacement surgery, so it probably won't be until sometime after Christmas, maybe New Year's. But I think I should take a little contingent with me.
Uh huh.
We should put something together.
Yeah, well, we definitely need to put you in closer contact with Michael here so that you guys can coordinate.
Right. It's so interesting that the water thing runs through my whole biography. This issue of the what do you call it? The natural healing power of water, and I've been very interested in the work that Schauberger did. And the vortex, and I even have a vortex creating device in the water system for the house. So it's not a new idea, but he's right. It could form the basis for motivating people to take charge. Let's not turn it over to a corrupt government. Let's do it ourselves. And let's get the people together so that we can talk about what would be the best way to responsibly develop this resource so that it genuinely does benefit everyone. And if we're issuing the money to represent the value of the water, then we can be sure that the money that we issue will be properly represented by value. No interest. If there's a dividend, so much the better. And we can, you know, we can use this idea and this possibility to motivate people. I'm pretty sure we should be able to do that. I yield.
Thank you, John.
Yes, that sounds wonderful, too. I mean, he was talking about the dividend, just like when they found the oil, I believe it was in Ireland, Iceland, I know it's Iceland. And now they're getting a dividend even when the child is born. And this is the same thing, from my understanding, from the Blue Kishina, that will bring about for prosperity for everyone. So wherever it may lead, that's why I said I was, because I knew about this many, many years ago. And but I didn't know exactly how it's going to take place, but I know this big shift is going on. So that's a very, very good thing. So yes, that sounds wonderful.
Let me put one more little idea out there. The thing that everybody wants, and it's not just some people, it really is just about everybody, unless you're a confirmed diehard sociopath. But the thing that everybody wants is to be able to realize their life's purpose. So discovering what your life's purpose is and being able to organize the world, your world, so that you're able to live out that life's purpose, that is what the new paradigm is all about. So if we were to issue the money so that everybody has what they need to live, so that they are at liberty to pursue happiness, then we're headed in the right direction. And if we always provide the capital that everyone needs in order to be able to realize their life's purpose, their mission in life, what they're inspired to dedicate their life to, then we will, in fact, create the bottom-up government that we're wanting. And if we use a very well-developed and wonderful governance system called dynamic governance or sociocracy, then we will actually succeed in working together cooperatively to create the economy and the government and the culture that we want. Why? Because we will cooperate with each other to provide all the material things, including the wonderful water, that we need in order to live. And we will govern ourselves out of our healthy sense of justice. Everything that we do from the point of view of governance is based on our equivalence, on our equality, and our common. And the reason that it's common is that it arises out of our actual human nature, our common sense of justice. And then we will be able to create a culture in which everyone is free to come to their full expression. I yield.
Thank you, Joe.
Well said. Beautiful. I yield.
I know we're right near the top of the hour here, and that's usually where Lewis and I bring a formal conclusion to our business meeting, but we frequently continue on with further discussion here. And just a brief note before we bring a close to our business meeting here, John. I'd like to point out an area that in the past, I think, we might have a little bit of a different perspective on. I see the source of the alternative currency commercial instruments that we're using to facilitate the economic lifeblood of our communities
as being with the individual qualified electors. Each individual qualified elector would submit to their town treasury bank $5,000 or $10,000 worth of promises to deliver goods and or services of their own production. And at that point, the town constable, town treasurer, would in essence be the town banker. And most of those resources would be circulating within the township, where different township members are providing goods and services for each other. But those goods and services that are usable and more productively shared with the larger community at the communities at the precincts or the county levels would be distributed more broadly. But I think it's really an important policy to recognize solidly that each qualified elector, as part of the paperwork that he fills out of becoming a township member, he promises to deliver goods and services of a specific value amount that is within his reasonably expected capabilities. And with all due respect, John, I don't see you decentralizing the economic system that you discuss right on down to those individual constituent members. Can you perhaps briefly comment or clarify your position there? Thank you.
Okay, so there are two things. One is most of what we need in order to live is being provided by somebody else, more and more big multinational corporations. So expecting to be able to create an economy in this day and age that's based on what the individual can do, food production and value-added processes for food is one of the few that is still, you know, somewhat open to us. And then the issue of land is, you know, important. But for the most part, what the community wants to do is agree that everybody should have what they need to live. And once you've done that in some reasonable way, in other words, there's a dividend that gets distributed, the principle that you're talking about is that everyone has a right to the capital that they can productively use. So establishing that and establishing the process whereby the community verifies that the amount of capital that's being requested is reasonable, that's a question that needs a certain level of expertise. And what the community wants to know is that the person who's requesting the capital from the community, which it's going to create, right, it's going to issue it, knows what it is that they need. And that's a very objective number. That's something that anybody who's ever done a business plan basically knows how to do. And so you would have all the help that you need in order to create the business plan that allows you to bring what it is that you're inspired to bring to the community. And there are some things where because they're goods or services that have an independent existence from the person who's producing them, they have a price and they create value. But then there are all the cultural things that create unmeasurable value. I mean, what's the value of a vibrant congregation, right? It's unmeasurable, and therefore it is consuming value in order to create the conditions in which the entire community is enlivened, and everything that everybody is wanting to do then gradually becomes, or actually relatively quickly, becomes possible. So the key to what we're trying to do is to be so radical as to be actually in coherence with, in resonance with our true human nature. And that, and the way to describe that is that everybody wants to be aware of who they are, what it is that they want to dedicate their lives to, and in a position to do that in the way that they want to do it. In other words, autonomously, with the opportunity to develop their capacity to do it increasingly well. And at the same time, everybody wants to go and help so-and-so do what it is that they want to do on the basis of what they're capable of. So you get this situation in which it's never, ever, ever about the money. It's about being in a position to organize things so that you can do what it is that you feel called to do. And that's the essence of a bottom-up community, that we experience ourselves as identifying what it is that our community needs, that we want to provide, and being in a position to provide it because the community puts us in that position. I yield.
Thank you.
I would like to do something to add on.
Hey, wait, Cynthia.
Okay.
I think we need to draw a conclusion to our formal meeting here. We're at the top of the hour here. Lewis, does that sound right to you?
It may sound right, but I would like to make a comment before we close.
Yeah, I was talking to Lewis. Can you give us some respect here? Lewis?
It is 7:05, so that is accurate, Charles. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to hereunder conclude our formal business meeting, and with invitation to everybody to stay on where we can continue on in the after call discussion here, and we will be discussing the economics issues that John and I believe are a little bit differing on here. Hopefully we can hammer out a consensus, maybe not, and Cynthia's input and everybody's input. But at this point, this is the 5th of November, 2020. I am Charles Stewart. This is the conferences, the formal portion of the conference of the Supreme Court of Law community for the USA and Jural Society, Jural Assembly. And our business meeting is hereby formally closed. And at this point, we can continue on into more open and public discussions. I believe, Cynthia, you were trying to get the floor to make some comments there. Would you like to go ahead and move forward there?
Yes, thank you. What he was saying to add on to it, when you do this private community, it's the same thing as what they did over millions of years as well, what we call custom norm from the canon law. And you have that opportunity because what they did was they put us in a monetary system, which is a death cult system. We don't have money in this. We are bankrupt. Those federal results is IOU. And when we start doing our own community, then we will have it decentralized. Everything now is centralized. And we would not, because there'd be real value to it. So when we start, like you say, go down and we start doing these communities, these private communities, we will have the same system set up, just like they do. And business is commerce. And we can also, for right now, because when you move something, you're going to have something to replace it. It depends on how strong we are. That's why a lot of these private communities that I am listening to now and learning a lot from, that they had already structured different things, have already set up, and a lot of them going global all over the world. Because this monetized debt system that we're in is global, the IMF, everything. So people are doing it now as well. And it's important that we can do this also. Well, we all want to do it because this is the shift. And it's going to be a different from the cooperation, but more for man. And like he was saying, it's about us giving our energy back to each other, unified. Like we help each other, we do different things. But it won't be a debt system. It'll be a life system.
Right, right. Cynthia, can we share the discussion a little bit here?
Yes. I just wanted to point out when he was talking about, when you asked about the economical change, the economical change will be a better change because we're in a bankruptcy system, and we'll be moving out of that bankruptcy system to our natural state, our solvent state of integrity, that we create these things because they are getting our energy and using it and keeping us in debt as we are the grantors.
I think we all comprehend that, Cynthia.
Well, I yield, but I was just comment on that part that we have that power, and it would not. And when we start doing it, we'll see it a lot simpler because we feel like...
I think we all comprehend that. There's issues on the table that I would like to try to...
I yield. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. John, are you still with us there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Your outline there, I didn't hear you respond directly to my specific point about the credit debt instruments that are circulating amongst us being issued by the constituent members or qualified electors of the individual within the individual townships. It sounds to me, if I might expand just a little bit, like you're advocating some sort of centrally planning mechanism for the issuance of a general currency that doesn't track the individual contributions of the individual constituent members. Am I in error in my summary there, sir?
Yes. How much capital can you be responsible to use productively?
It's not about how much I can use. It's about how much I can produce to the community, sir.
That's what I said. How much?
No, you said
capital.
How much I could use. That's what you said. You're talking consumption, and I'm talking production.
I'm talking production. The point is that because we don't have any experience of what money actually is, we're constantly confused. And
well, maybe you are. I think I've got a clear picture, and I think a number of us here have clear pictures, sir.
There's a presumption that money needs to be issued for production.
Yeah, that's why people issue their own promises to deliver goods and services so they can produce, sir.
Right. So the currency is always created by the lawgiver.
The currency should be created by the individual constituent members who are promising to deliver goods and services.
That's the amount.
No, that can be any amount. People that are capable of producing more can issue more. People that are not capable of producing very much can just issue a small amount.
So that's why I said that the community needs to have confidence that the amount of money that somebody is issuing to themselves is a reasonable amount of money.
They would be issuing it to the town treasury, and they would be maintaining consensus with all of the other township members in their township that they are not exceeding their reasonable expectations in what they are promising to deliver.
Right, and who's issuing the money? They're deciding.
And each individual can members of the township community, sir.
Each individual is deciding how much money.
It will be a consensus from the township community, sir.
That's right. It's the township community that's issuing the money, but the individual gets to decide how much. And the reason is that...
Not how much he consumes. He can decide how much he produces. But, what he gets to consume...
So we're talking about the money up front, right? You need the money up front to organize things so that you can produce.
I don't think so. I think people can issue their money up front based upon their own promises to deliver, and they can create it out of thin air, just like the Federal Reserve bankers do, only rather than the Federal Reserve bankers, the individual constituents will actually be reasonably capable of delivering some goods and services to back up the currency that they're issuing.
Right. So that's what, But that's why I was saying that we need to be sufficiently radical to actually capture what it is that we want. And if you're too... one of the insights that I had a long time ago is that the problem that we have in America is that everybody's a pragmatist. All they want to know is, does it work? Not why does it work? And so as long as we're bringing what it is that we're trying to manifest into relationship to our true human nature, then we recognize that there are two aspects to that. One aspect is the individual's relationship to their animating spirit. And the other is the social context in which they're functioning. So we're trying to do two things. We're trying to create a situation in which everybody is being encouraged and recognized for the contribution that they want to make, the way that they want to do it, etc. And so the question that the person has, that everybody has, is what is it that I'm really interested in, and what does the community need? And how do I bring those two things together? And then the second thing is, what is the exact right amount of money that I need in order to organize things so that I can do that? Now, the one side of it is, how much credit do I need, right, in order to set myself up so that I can do what it is that I want to do? And who am I cooperating with to do that? Because you usually don't work just on your own. We're not homesteading, and it's not just a family anymore. It has much more. Most of what we want to do has to do with the culture, like the Supreme Court of Law for the USA. Most of it has to do with that sort of thing, not producing a widget. The widgets are all being produced. We don't have to worry about that. The thing that we need to worry about is all of the things that have to do with our individual capacities. And you know, like the water, we need to be totally changing the way that we look at health and how to maintain health. And one of the things that everybody knows from their own experience is that the most important aspect of health is the animating spirit. I mean, when you're really enthusiastic about doing something, you're in really good health. And when you come, even if you're eating Twinkies, I mean, really, it's an actually very well known, if secret, fact. So that's the level of radicalness that we need. That what community means, there are two elements to the word community. One is the gift. So munus is gift, and commune is together. So I am together with all of you because you recognize the gift that I have to offer the community. And that is, in fact, what creates community. Community is created by our ability to recognize each other's gifts. Now, the way in which the money plays into that is that everybody wants to know objectively as possible, how valuable what it is that they're doing is. And so there has to be a way in which the community can have a say in pricing. Once you've decided as a community, which is a very easy thing to do, that there should be no externalized costs, so we're going to include in the price that we pay for our food all of the costs of producing the food. And once we've agreed that the pricing is a matter of our healthy human judgment, then we begin to get that real concrete experience of the objective nature of what it is we're doing. If I'm producing something and nobody wants to buy it at the price that I'm, or even at any price, right, without advertising and manipulation and, you know, all the mind control and all the rest of the stuff that goes on all the time, I want to know that, because then I'm going to change you know, modify it. I'm going to get the feedback that I need from my customers or from my clients, and I'm going to modify what I'm doing so that it really is valuable. That's what we all want. We all want to be in a position to do what our community values that we're particularly suited to do because that's what we're inspired to do. In other words, we have to be sufficiently radical in our understanding of our true nature so that the question for the community is it a good idea? Somebody has an idea, something that they want to do, and so the community is going to ask itself, well, is this a good idea? And once they've decided that it is a good idea, let's do all the roadways solar, you know, let's use solar cells to pave all the roads. I mean, it's just an example. Then the question is, are there people who want to do it? Because if there are people who were wanting to do it, particularly the people who proposed it, then the next question is, are they capable of doing it? Because if they're capable of doing it, the next question is, and you know, do we have the educational facilities? Do we have the knowledge within the community to make sure that the people who are wanting to do this will really know how to do it so that we can have confidence that it'll be done well and we'll realize the value? Then the next question is it a good use of the resources, both the natural resources and the built resources? I mean, one of the things that towns complain about when the frackers come is, oh my God, all that infrastructure that's being destroyed by the trucks is going to fall on the taxpayers who aren't going to benefit. So is it a good use of the built resources? And is it a good use of the natural resources? As soon as it's a good idea, there are people who want to do it, they're capable of doing it, and it's a good use of the resources, then we will issue the money to realize John. That value.
John?
Yeah.
I'm enjoying your presentation, but I would like to spend some time trying to build consensus amongst our small remaining community here rather than just turn the entire microphone over to yourself there, sir.
Sure, go right ahead. I just thought that I should answer your question reasonably comprehensively, you know.
Well,
that's
I appreciate your effort, but a little bit of a pause once in a while and some back and forth to my mind is of immense benefit. And
yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Are there others that haven't spoken very much that would like to participate in the discussion thus far? Anybody? Hearing none. I would like to, in the spirit of consensus building, John. It doesn't seem to me like you're fixating on the township community level for deciding how much resources each individual member or constituent of the community should receive. It seems, and I think, if I might rattle a little bit similarly to what you did on my views of how this should function, I'd like to point out the example of a farmer, maybe 20 miles away from the nearest city of a couple thousand people. He can produce a lot of produce and maybe even animal products that are desired by the people in the city. But it's usually a narrow harvest season. And when that farmer has harvest, he would take his cantaloupes and watermelon and corn and whatever else he's growing, and he would deliver it to either a central distribution network, probably organized at the precinct level, which would be 10 townships, so that
instantaneously. As soon as that food is ripe and ready to consume, it's instantaneously distributed to everybody in the community. And if he's producing way more than that precinct level 100 court community can use, then it's produced even wider to the county or and larger communities around, so that the modern store grocery process of keeping things in refrigerators so that they can be sold in off season later on, that would be over with. People could get the produce, the fresh produce, delivered to their front door instantaneously as soon as the farmer harvests it, and it goes through the central distribution network and out to the individual households. Then the individual households would decide whether to refrigerate it or freeze it, or what to do in accordance with their needs. And if they didn't want some of it, they would just pass it on, and it would be distributed further on out through the community. At that point, even though the farmer is only producing for maybe 2 or 3 months a year when his harvest season is happening, he gets enough credits from the amount of produce that he has fed produced for the community there, the larger community. He gets enough credit because he produces massive amounts when he does produce it. And at that point, he's got enough credit from what he produced so that he can buy all of the necessities for his existence out on his farm for the other 10 months of the year.
Does that
sound like a reasonable environment that we could be moving towards?
Right. So what I tried to do, or what I did do, was help create the first community-supported agriculture project in America at Indian Line Farm. And that was that whole idea. So what you're recognizing is that the activity that we feel called to engage in and doing it the way that we want to do it is the important thing. And that needs to provide enough money. This is the whole parity issue. I don't know if you're familiar with parity in American history. There's a long period where they're destroying the family farm and consolidating everything, and there's a lot of protests. And so the Department of Agriculture decides that they're going to provide price support so that the farmer has parity. The farmer can actually earn enough from his crop, even though it's being treated as a commodity, et cetera, so that he can actually live. And, of course, it hasn't, you know, because the essence of it was never totally understood, it hasn't worked, and we've never really had parity. But it raises the issue of at what price. And so there are two questions. One question is, what is the standard of living that our common economy can provide us all with? Right? What is the standard of living that our community can support for everyone? And there are lots of people who aren't capable of producing value. There are lots of people who aren't capable of earning their living. I spent my career working with people with disabilities. I know this phenomenon very well. And, of course, the society agrees that those people should be able to live at somewhere near or at the median standard of living that everybody else enjoys. So that's the first issue. What is the standard of living that our community can sustain? And everybody should have that as a matter of right. If we give everybody the money that they need to live, then they really are at liberty to pursue happiness. So
if I might, can we do some back and forth here, John, instead of
sure, long, let's do long back rant. And forth.
All right, thank you. with all due respect, the manner in which you're choosing your words here, and maybe I'm misinterpreting, but it seems to me that it's rather socialist and broad, comprehensive, in large, ambiguous, warm and fuzzy nanny state terms. With all due respect, if I might finish my thought, by having the individual farmer get a nice big chunk of credit assigned to him by his town constable for the massive truckloads of produce that he's bringing in and delivering to the community instantaneously, that will be instantaneously distributed to all of the people that are incapable of producing for themselves, like what you're talking about and what you're concerned about. But we got to first incentivize the producers.
Yep.
If we
Nobody
don't,
needs
if,
to be
if I might finish my thought. If we do not incentivize our producers seriously at the grassroots level, then all the metaphysical mumbo-jumbo about how we're going to distribute it for everybody rapidly becomes meaningless, I dare suggest, sir. I yield.
Okay, so nobody...
Can I say something?
Wait, Cynthia. Please allow John to respond.
So nobody needs to be incentivized to do what they feel called to do. That's the...
Yes, they do, John. We need incentives for people. We need incentives for farmers to produce so that they can be assured they will get rewards for all of their hard work.
Yeah. Nobody's working for the rewards. This is a myth. This is not reality. Nobody wants to work for money. Nobody. And everybody.
Well, your definition of money is perverse, sir.
No, nobody wants to do it so that they can live.
People have a right to reasonably expect reasonable economic rewards for what they are contributing to the community welfare.
Right.
No, people want to know that what they're doing is appreciated.
It takes. We're going to have to agree to disagree, apparently, here, Brother John.
Well, we're not. It's not a matter of disagreeing. It's a matter of getting
to a place. You don't seem to want to incentivize our grassroots producers like I do.
Do you need to be incentivized to do what you're doing with your life?
Yes.
Oh, and what is your incentive? Who's paying you to do this?
The word need is ambiguous. I don't.
I never said anything about need.
If I might finish my thought, it is true that I don't need it, but I am much. I am three times as productive in what I like to produce. If I've got incentives that it's going to be appreciated, and that when I need groceries and things, it's going to be provided for me. If I'm not getting nothing for the hard work I'm doing, I'll probably still be doing it, but I will only be one-third as productive. Huh?
Thank you for proving my point. What we need is the money that we need to live, right? So what the tribe does, and this is very important, because the turning the authority over to the government to do what it wants, and the government is all run by the corporatocracy and the cabal.
Well, you're talking de facto. You're not talking township government, right?
No, I'm not talking township government. I'm saying the
okay,
way...
Okay, well, it's good to try to use your words with precision there, sir.
Okay. So the way in which the existing monetary system has distorted human nature is what needs to be appreciated. And there are a lot of myths. There are a lot of myths that are just simply lies. And the main lie is that people want to earn their living. Nobody wants to earn their living. Everybody wants to have their living given to them. In fact,
I don't agree with that.
Well, you're doing it regardless.
No.
I mean, you just look at your own. You look at your own reality. All of us, everybody would like to have what they need to live, so that they're in a position to pursue happiness. They're at liberty to pursue happiness. There's only one thing, and you know this. I know you know this. It's only one thing that makes you happy, and that is succeeding in accomplishing your life's purpose. It's not in the least bit ambiguous. You know what your life's purpose is, and the only thing that makes you happy is pursuing it. And you go about it.
In terms of practicality of engineering economic systems, those are ambiguous statements, John.
What's ambiguous?
We all want to do what we want to do in our life calling. That doesn't put food on the table.
You mean there aren't people who want to put healthy food on the table?
There are people that want to put healthy food on the table, but it's not going to work in an efficient economic system unless we have incentives for those farmers to put the food on the table.
Yeah, that's why I said we need to be involved in deciding the price.
The township. The price is afterwards. When the farmer brings all of his produce into the distribution point, that food gets distributed instantaneously to everybody that is a constituent member of the community instantaneously, and the value that is assigned to that farmer for what he has contributed can be done afterwards based upon the consensus of the township or precinct level community. Does that sound right?
So you're saying what I'm saying a little bit differently and not quite as sophisticated.
Well, I think it's more specific, but and sophisticated means adulterated. Are you aware of that, John?
What I'm trying to say is that the way in which we've been trained to think about all of these issues is the problem. So you don't ever want to create something out of the example. You always want to create something out of the principle. And so I'm just talking about the principle. How you work it out in practice with real people who wanted, you know, who are wanting to grow the food, and most of the people who want to grow the food have a particular thing that they want to do. They have a particular aspect of the food system that they want to produce. So the responsibility of the community is to make sure that what it is that they want to do is a good use of the resources. You never get away from the way in which the tribe creates the conditions in which we all live. So it's the monetary system that we use is what, and what the money is being issued for, is what creates the conditions. It's in the nature of the case. So what we're wanting to do, from my point of view, is come up with the basic ideas, the practical implementation of those ideas, once they're established, namely that everybody has a right to an equitable share of the economy that we all participate in creating, both by being producers and by being consumers. That's the one thing, that's the one basic idea. And then the other basic idea, out of which all of the practical ways of doing it can be developed, is that everybody has a right to the capital their capacities warrant. If you have a right as part of the community, part of the township, as a qualified elector or not, even if you're not a qualified elector, we're not going to let you starve. But if everybody has a right to the capital that they can productively use, then you have that essence. You have that basic idea that's necessary to make this whole thing work. So I have a right to an equitable share of the productivity of the overall economy. So I get the check at the beginning of the month so that I can live at the standard of living that we've agreed is reasonable. And what's the differential between the highest paid person and the lowest paid person? Oh, well, now there's an interesting discussion to have. You know, it's somewhere between 5 and 100. nobody thinks that it should be more than 100, and nobody thinks, or hardly anybody ever thinks, that it should be less than 5. So somewhere in there, we're going to come to a consensus, and then how much capital do you need in order to realize your life's intention? What are you going to dedicate your life to? That is the question. That's the real question. The real question is, how do you decide what it is that you're going to put your life energy into accomplishing? Well, you need to have the feedback from the community about what it needs so that you can see what it is that you want to do.
John, I yield. Thank you. I've got some real specific ideas in this area, and it's from our conversation here. It's seeming like consensus on my specific ideas is eluding us. And perhaps it would be good at this point to try to open up the discussion again more to the other three or four participants here. Maybe some of them might be able to find some middle ground between us or something. Is there others that would like to participate in this economics discussion that John and I are having here? Anybody?
I just wanted to say that we should always be guided by the God's principle. A man is worthy of his hire. That's all. I yield.
Thank you, Kathy.
You know, the parable of the talents has been so miserably misinterpreted over and over and over again that it's a good place to start. In other words, the idea is that you do something with the talent, and it's interesting that that's the word that they're using for the currency. You do something with the talent that benefits the community. And because it benefits the community, it has this tendency to increase in value. So there's an idea that everybody knows, but nobody knows. It's another one of those open, hidden secrets. And that is that every honest, transparent exchange facilitated by money happens because it makes both parties to the exchange better off. In other words, it's profitable to both parties. You get that you pay the money and you get what it is that you want because what it is that you're getting for the money is more valuable than the money. And the person who's selling it gets the money, which is more valuable to them than what they're than the product, the good or service that they're providing. So it's in our nature, it's in human nature, it's a result of human nature that we could all be enjoying rising standards of living. And the idea that we could be enjoying rising standards of living in a sustainable, just world has everything to do with the fact that using money is what enables the division of labor from one point of view, and enables everybody to pursue that which they're inspired to pursue. So what we want to do with our townships, and the most important thing to do with our townships, is to create this sense that what we want for everybody, this is the golden rule, what we want for everyone is what we want for ourselves. And when we make no distinction, and when we have no desire to control anybody, and we only do the things that we can do out of our inspiration, then we are living close to God. Then we are acting out of the creation, the creator impulse. And our entire mission on the earth in being part of the society that we belong to, the group, the township, the whatever it is that we end up creating, right? Township is a good idea, or the ward, or whatever. Everything that we are doing is a result of being embedded in and valued by our community. So I don't, nobody will ever want anybody to tell them what to do. Nobody wants to be told what they have to do by an authority outside of themselves. And that's the principle that needs to be implemented by our townships. Nobody is ever going to be told what it is that they have to do. Everybody is going to be encouraged by their relationships within the community to do that which they're inspired to do. I yield.
Thank you, John. I can't help but think that at least at some point down the road, we might be able to develop a closer consensus on how all of this should fit together.
Right. But my effort is to create a sense for first principles. Because if you're trying to get at the principle from the example, and yours was an example about what would happen with the farmer, then you don't get to the principle. It's the way in which the American experiment has gone astray. It's the reason that it's gone astray. And when de Tocqueville was describing America in his book, he makes that point. He says that the American character is a centrally good Christian religious, you know, motivated, intrinsically motivated. And then he points out, but they're pragmatic. They aren't guided by the principles of the Enlightenment. They're guided by what works. And therefore, everything that happens, they're isn't being brought back to and referred back to the first principle that everybody should be living at. So there are three ideals that we all want. That we
before
all
you go
experience.
On, before you go on, can I respond to your points there, sir?
Sure.
Thank you. Pragmatism versus principles, I think, was the proposition that you're putting on the table there.
Yeah.
It's my proposition that people can maintain their principles with 100% effectiveness while still being socially responsible and pragmatic. I am totally confused by why you seem some sort of an inherent conflict there.
I don't.
Well, how come
the
you're
individual,
just using them consistently in your arguments here?
No, not with the individual. I'm not talking about the individual. I'm talking about trying to get at the principle with the practical example.
Well, the practical example of the farmer that I illustrated delivering all of his crops to a central distribution network, that is both pragmatic and I see no conflict with principles. You criticized my example of the farmer. Do you see somehow that is in conflict with higher principles of economic justice?
Right. So that's why I wanted to talk about the actual principles. So
there's a question on the table. Did you see a conflict in my example with the pragmatic issue with the farmer distributing his food during harvest season? Is that somehow in conflict with righteous economic principles that you advocate here, sir?
I just have to take what the farmer gives me? I mean,
the farmer doesn't give it.
Know what the people want?
Huh? Huh?
How does the farmer know what the people want?
He distributes it to he distributes his produce to the precinct level 100 court that distributes it automatically to everybody that wants it. The farmer doesn't give a damn whether or not you want his food or not. There are people who do want it.
The far, But you see, that's the problem. If the
it's not. The person that is looking for the free handout that you seem to be advocating is going to go to the precinct captain and say, hey, I need some free handouts here, but I don't want any of that fresh produce the farmer gave me, so can I have some Twinkies or whatever? And if the guy's otherwise a constituent member and qualified elector, he'll get his Twinkies or junk food or whatever he wants.
Yeah, but because that's not true of you, it's disingenuous of you to make the assumption that it would be true of someone else.
You're the one that set the parameters. I'm just operating within the parameters of your proposition here, sir.
Nobody wants a handout.
Yes, a lot of people do. There are a lot of parasites in this world, John. You're being delusional.
Once they're in a community that recognizes their autonomy, then they're not. I mean, there have been so many social experiments that demonstrate this, that it's not even controversial anymore.
Your qualified elector status is based upon your honorably maintaining good behavior. And if all you want is a free handout from the community, then you're not a qualified elector.
I agree with you. And since nobody wants a handout,
I just screamed at you that there are lots of people that want handouts.
In the existing situation, not in the township. In the existing situation.
So long as they maintain their qualified elector status. But they can start screaming for handouts, and then the township community is going to have to start questioning their qualified elector status and cut them off because they're not producing, they're just taking.
This is why I'm talking about the principle, because if we're trying to control human nature by the way that we're organizing ourselves, I mean, the qualified elector status then becomes a way of, you know, controlling people. Well, you didn't manage your qualified elector status. I think you're goofing off. The thing to recognize from human nature and a genuine understanding of human nature is that let's put it this way. Maslow described the hierarchy of needs. And when the sociologists decided whether to see whether it was true or not, they had to reverse the order.
Who described the hierarchy of needs there? I didn't hear your word.
Maslow? Remember that, there's the our basic needs, you know, for food and shelter and sleep and what have you, and there are belonging needs and our esteem needs. And eventually you get to self-realization. So there were a number of different experiments in order to see whether there was any veracity to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And what they discovered was that self-actualization is the motivator. Everybody is motivated by their desire for self-actualization in order to take care. And as a result, they take care of all their other needs. So what I'm trying to get at is that an honest conversation about our nature is the most important thing to have.
I agree.
Since we need to be sure that what we're saying is true of us, and true of you, true of me, true of everybody else on this call, true of everybody who's dedicated their life to restoring common law and to getting rid of the nanny state and the control. So that's the most important thing. And once you're trying to engineer society to take care of the problems that you see in the existing society, then you're in no different situation than the nanny state, than the cabal, than the masters of the universe.
If I might, the nanny state is unprincipled. The examples that I cited, I don't believe that you indicated are out of harmony with higher principles of economic justice.
No, that's why I was going to say something about the three ideals. There are three ideals that everybody wants. And the first one is freedom. Everybody wants to be free to do whatever they damn please. Everybody wants to be in a position to do whatever it is that they feel inspired to do.
I think we all know that.
Part of our nature.
If I may?
Nikki, please.
Yeah, I'm listening to both of you, and I'm listening to you both have good points that you're making. And I think, though, where it all boils down to is going to be up to the community which way they want to go with what is the payoff that they want in their community. Don't you think?
Well, that's why I'm so interested in getting this aspect of human nature really clear.
Right, and but you have one aspect, but there's other people who have, you know, like, you do this for me and I'm going to do that for you. They like the barter rather than having some sort of a monetary system. So it's...
never change.
Right, so it's going to be up to the community to decide which way they want to go with it, and with cryptocurrencies and stuff like that. John, you just have one aspect of everything that's out there at this present time. So it's up to the community. It's going to be up to the community what it is that they want as their method. It's the way I'm seeing it, and listening to both of you and hearing Cynthia. It seems. Appropriate to leave it to the community to decide, but let them know that it's out there, and what you've been doing in New England, safe for the common good. I mean, it's excellent.
Right. Nikki, the point is that you can't get around that. It is always going to be up to the community.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. It always will. So what are the ideas out of which the community is operating? And that's all I'm interested in. The only thing that I'm interested in, really, is getting everybody to the place where they recognize that unless everything is happening voluntarily as inspired, somebody's controlling it.
Exactly.
And so you're not free. So if anybody is familiar with Larkin Rose and Josie the Outlaw, when they started, they weren't talking about how to make the ideal society. They were pointing out that the moment when you give your authority over to the community or the government, you've lost it. You never, ever, ever want to do that. Never, ever do you ever want to give over to the community the power to coerce you to do anything. This is why I say it has to be completely radical. It has to be completely in concert with our actual nature. And nobody disagrees. Nobody wants to be told what to do by somebody in authority. In fact, all of us who were involved in this effort that is our primary motivation. We are primarily motivated because we're sick and tired of being coerced one way or another into doing something that we don't believe in.
Absolutely.
And that we don't feel is just.
And that's
so there are three, I need to just get this out, okay? There are three principles. One is freedom, the other is justice, and the third is community. And they're all in conflict with each other all the time. Until you recognize that the individual needs to be free, the community needs to be just, and we provide for each other by cooperating with each other. And then they're all in their right place, and everybody will feel that what they're doing is just.
And it's the common interest of the community. But I do also want, if we're going back under scriptural principles, to realize that the gold and silver is his, and that's what lasts forever. So I'll go ahead and mute out. But we have to get there first, and that has to be in our local communities to get us to a place where we can do it, you know, the way it ought to be. Thank you. I yield.
I just wanted to voice a thought. Somebody else may have already, but this absolute freedom for everyone to do, to never be told what to do, has its limits, and that is if you're causing harm to someone else, of course.
Well, of course.
So, you know, nobody's totally free to do whatever it is that they want all the time. I yield.
Well, of course not. That's where the whole idea of justice comes in.
Right.
In other words, if you're in a community that values you, in which you have equivalent status, in which you are equal, not equal in the way that some sort of equality that doesn't make any sense, where you're being heard. So one of the most important things that in any sort of way in which we're going to learn how to govern ourselves is that we have to hear from everyone. You can't come up with something that you are now going to impose on everybody else, because that'll never work. Without having participated in coming up with that which we have created the consensus about, this is the reason why this idea of consensus is so important. If you haven't participated in coming up with that consensus, it's going to be very difficult for you to comply voluntarily. And at some point, there will need to be coercion. So the only time that the coercion is justified is when somebody claims that you've done them harm. And then in the township idea, okay, so now we have a jury, and it's a jury of your peers. It should be people who know you. But on the other hand, we might very well say, okay, how do we mend the tear in the community that was created by this harm? And everybody in the community is involved in that. What is it that has happened in your life that allows you to do whatever it is that caused harm? And everybody can be oriented towards creating the conditions for that person so that it never happens again, so that they're included, so that they're not ostracized, so that they're not feeling that the only way to get what they need is by harming someone.
If I might.
Yeah.
The common law tradition was that if people committed crimes and they did not repent, they were outlawed and excluded from the community?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm glad we're
there. There's no doubt about that. There isn't any other way to deal with it. The issue is, what is it that we could do so that that person does, in fact, feel included? So when you look at nonviolent communication, for example, the issue there is, what need is not being met? What is the need of that person that is manifesting in their willingness to cause someone harm? What is it that is motivating that? And this is why the understanding of human nature is so important, because you end up recognizing that I'm just like everybody else. Once you're aware of that, and you're not trying to ascribe to, except for the sociopaths who don't have a connection between the right and the left hemisphere of their brain and therefore are incapable of being inspired, just so you know, except for the psychopaths and the sociopaths, we're always in a position to recognize and do something about what it is that's causing that person to be willing to harm someone. And
if I
once
might,
you're in that
mindset,
then everything.
I do too. I did.
You're talking about psychologically manipulating the system so that no one will ever want to do anything that could cause harm to someone else. I think somebody does want an act that they maybe don't anticipate would harm someone else, and it does, and they've been notified about it, then what they should do is work it out with the person that they harmed. You try it a second time, you try it a third time. If that still doesn't work, then you go to the community, and they decide what the solution should be. I yield.
That's right. That's absolutely right. That's what I'm saying. And that the thing that the community is interested in is remedying the harm. In other words, the community isn't interested in punishing the person. The community is interested in undoing or finding a way to deal with the harm that feels right, that actually seems just. And so the way the common law developed was that the culture was so well established, what everybody did. I mean, the kind of mobility that we have now, you didn't have in those days. In fact, you more or less inherited your career from your family. So in the nature of the way of the times when common law developed, the whole point was that everybody was integrated into the community. Everybody had their proper place. Everybody knew what they were supposed to be doing. And so if you did cause harm, then the issue was, how do we deal with this? And so if there was most of the things that rose to the level of an actual crime were egregious enough so that they needed to be dealt with. And if you ended up feeling like this person is not able to repent, to use the Christian term, then of course they would need to be excluded because the community doesn't have the capability of dealing with it. You know, it's beyond the capability of the community to deal with.
I might, thank you. John, I think you're perhaps, with all due respect, I think you're perhaps glossing over the historical conflict between the Roman Empire, slave traders' model of government, and the tradition of freedom and liberty under the Anglo-Saxon common law peer model of government, and before that, the Israelite Torah model of government.
No, I'm not.
You're focusing on the individuals, and there's paradigm wars here. There's wars between ideologies that are really, really big, and the psychopaths that you referred to earlier, they, I'm glad you confessed that they are not to be part of our community. But the true nasty psychopaths are a very small percentage. They control vast numbers of unprincipled people that are not psychopaths but are just moral prostitutes, and like a lot of the experiments by psychologists show, people are willing to shock other people to death if they're told by authority figures to do it. And so we got a bigger problem. We can't just purge the psychopaths and be content that everything's going to be wonderful. We got to also purge their minions, because their minions are being sent into amongst our communities to subvert our ability to build any truly natural, organic, and fully accountable self-governing communities. Are you
right? Absolutely. And so the point is that the sense of justice that everybody has. Everybody has a very similar sense for when something is unjust. It's
right.
Generally speaking, it's not controversial. And then everybody disagrees about what to do about it. No.
The common law communities and the Israelite Torah law communities did not disagree. They had harmony.
That's what I'm saying. That's why you need the consensus of the 12 jurors. In other words, if you ask one person how they think you know, we should deal with it. This is why the jury does two things. It decides what the facts of the case are, and then it decides what the just remedy should be. And that's, you know, the essence of our nature. That we both,
I think that's one issue. I don't think it's two.
That was my point. So the first thing that we need to do is establish what actually happened. And then we need to decide what the just thing is. And because everybody...
No. I think it's a one-step process. I think the proposition on the table at the moment the complaint is filed is, did something unjust happen? Okay?
Right.
It's a bicameral, double-eye focus. We do have a separate reference to standards of justice, and then as the facts are being presented before us, as they're unfolding, we're monitoring the presentation of the facts before the court for something that's going to trigger us and say, oh, wait a second, that was unjustified action. That deserves some punishment of some sort. Does that sound right?
It deserves a remedy.
Yes.
Huh?
I agree. It deserves a remedy.
Some things are not remediable. If you kill somebody, there is no remedy. You can't bring them back to life.
Okay.
All
so
you got left. All you got left is justice.
There are lots of stories about the way in which restorative justice has solved the problems of murder to the satisfaction of both parties.
I doubt it.
It's
cold-blooded murder
can
never be fully remedied on this earth.
It's absolutely true.
I doubt it. You cold-bloodedly murder somebody.
I know that it's just a matter of not knowing. The whole motivation for restorative justice was a result of how often in a restorative justice process, both the murderer, and the person whose loved one was murdered were able to reconcile. And that's what motivated the number of stories about how that has actually worked and happened. That is what motivated the development and the continued development of restorative justice.
It sounds in conflict with the common law tradition.
Isn't that what they did isn't that the Desmond Tutu model that they use in South Africa?
Right, but of course they never do any of these. Yeah, right. They never do.
Yeah, there's a lot of horror stories came out of that.
Right. But they never do these things to all the way. They never do them all the way. There are lots of restorative justice stories where they get the perpetrator and the victim together, and in the context, it usually involves the whole community that was affected by it, not just the immediate people. And then there gradually develops. Sometimes it happens very suddenly, sometimes it happens over time, but what develops is the way in which to create the experience of justice. Okay, this harm has been remedied because we've all agreed to do this, that, or the other thing. And the reason that I keep talking about why it's so important to base all of these things that we're trying to do on a genuine understanding of our nature, in other words, not what we think human nature is, because the culture has totally distorted that, but to always ask yourself, how would I do it? What would I do? And not to accept any of these shibboleths from the ready-made concepts from the culture that the culture immediately provides. If you do that, you never get to that experience of freedom, justice, and community.
If I might,
Sure. John, I'm really hopeful that someplace down the road we'll find a nice harmonious consensus. But presently, the manner in which each of us are choosing our words and things seems to be recurringly producing conflict. I'm rather inclined to. We've had the conference going for like over 3 hours now. Unless there's other people that would like to you know, that not you and me polarized, Nikki or Dave and the Thumb, or maybe even Kathy a little bit more, any of the rest of you like to say anything before we kind of think about winding it down here?
Yes, I just wanted to say again, I thought that we were all in agreement that we were going to be seeking common law solutions and not experimenting around with restorative justice or any of these other concepts that sound really good sometimes. But I think that just the notion that we have common law can be a disincentive for people who would harm others. So it doesn't have to go all the way through the process and having a jury of 12 decide something. But and then there's also the possibility that you have to think that this whoever was harmed, whoever allegedly did the harming, was given three chances before he even got to you. That's part of the common law process. And if he still didn't resolve things through restorative justice or whatever, then, you know, he's not exactly, you know, in a position to be a good candidate necessarily for restorative justice. And now it's time, as the Bible says, that he can be treated as we would the heathen, and to put them before the judgment of his peers. And his peers may not agree. And if his peers don't agree, then, well, you know, there's not going to be a judgment.
Now
but
that,
if they
that
do,
never goes away, does it?
Pardon?
That never goes away. That'll always be the case.
What will
at
always
the end
be the
of
case?
The day, at the end of the day, it's the whatever the system that the community is using. In our case, we're really talking about common law. At the end of the day, it is going to be a jury of his peers that decides his fate.
Yes.
It's in the nature of the process. And what I was talking about was the desire, your desire, to see what you could do in order to heal the rift rather than go immediately to punishment. And it's
just
the
three notice process. That's why the three notice process is biblically oriented.
Right.
And if that doesn't work, then you go into the jury trial process.
Of course, absolutely. What else are you going to do? You know?
Exactly.
And the idea that you're judging somebody not by the letter of the law, but by the sense of justice of the 12 members of the jury who are your peers. They at least have some knowledge of you. You were part of their community. They have some way of judging, you know, whether you're a completely hopeless case and need to be removed from the community, or whether there's possibility for repentance and restoration. So it's the essence of the common law idea is that you will be judged by people who know you. And if you're being judged by people who know you, you can have some confidence that they're not just going to be vindictive. The restorative justice process usually starts by asking the victim what they believe would solve the problem, not what the law says. And it's the getting away from that experience of agency in the whole thing that's the important element.
The jury decides what the law is, and they can have it plenty of input from the victim in doing that. But ultimately,
yeah,
it's their decision, not the victim's decision.
I wasn't suggesting that it was the victim's decision. I was saying that the jury, when it's really doing what the common law jury can do, is interested in what the victim sees would be just. They might not agree with it, but they would be interested in that. And that's what Roman law doesn't do. The thing that we're up against is the way in which the contract has eviscerated our healthy human judgment. In other words, we're all subject to unconscionable contracts. What is the word, Charles, when you can't fulfill the contract?
Contract limitation.
Yeah. I mean, we're all subject to that. So we're all very confused.
We don't have to be.
No, we don't. Not if we get our act together and we start creating communities in which our sense of justice prevails rather than the rules. The last thing we want is to be governed by rules. We want to be governed by our capacity to see what the community needs and do what the community needs. Which
if
means
I might, John, the Seventh Amendment refers to the rules of the common law, and you frequently juxtaposed rules and law as opposed to justice. And
Well, I
believe with all due respect that is an error. If you look at the two Latin words jus, which is the root of justice, J-U-S, it is identical to lex, which is law. The two terms in the law dictionary cross-reference each other. Justice is the law. Law is always just. Real law is always just. Real rules are always just. The rules of the common law are always just. That's why the tradition of the precedent from the common law juries about laws of trespass and things like that are so critically important. That's why peace officers under common law jurisdiction are to prioritize only keeping the peace. These are well-settled norms of natural organic law in harmony with the spirit of the universe, like Cynthia was talking about earlier. And they're well-settled through Anglo-American common law tradition if we can revert back to them without a lot of modern-day mumbo-jumbo that is distracting us. Are you?
Yeah, well, I don't mean to be providing mumbo jumbo. You see, the interesting thing is that the the law is, as you point out, the law needs to be just, and common law is just because it's an appeal to the community, to the jurors. So the interesting thing is that the sheriff or the constable, as you call him, he has executive discretion, and depending on the way in which the sensibility of the community, his discretion is going to be what creates the peace or not. And so he can be as aggressive and as forceful as he needs to be, or as gentle and as accommodating as he feels called to be. And so recognizing the distinction between the legislative function, which is the community deciding what would be good and funding it, and the executive function, which is the selecting the people who would be best able to carry out what the community agreed would be good, and then the judicial system to judge whether or not it was good. So there are sort of three basic functions. The agreement function, which is the legislative function, this is a good thing to do. The executive function, which is carrying out that which we agreed would be good, and the judicial function, which judges whether or not it was in fact good. So, and you don't need the judicial system to get involved in anything unless there's a sense on the part of somebody or a small group of people or whatever that it wasn't. And it's always that, it's always the way in which the complaint arises. It's, you know, where is this complaint coming from, and what will be necessary in order to resolve the complaint that common law is really good at. Common law is really good at that. So I don't think that there is any conflict between what I'm talking about and what you're talking about. The main thing that I'm talking about is making sure that we're not making assumptions about what other people would do, and therefore creating rules and regulations and ways of dealing with it that get us right back to where we're trying to get away from.
Well, the only rules I'm advocating are the well-settled traditional rules of the common law. I'm not advocating fabricating anything out of thin air here.
Right. So it's the maxims of law that are a result of if you can find the applicable maxim of law to help you think about, so that you won't be confused in the way that you're trying to resolve the harm, then you know, it's much more likely to be satisfying to everybody concerned. In other words, this is the principle, this is the maxim of law that I'm applying to this situation. Do you see that it applies? And when you're doing that, it has to do simply with what do we need in order to be able to think about things? Because they eliminated logic, grammar, and rhetoric from the curriculum. So hardly anybody knows how to think. People don't recognize tautologies. People don't recognize errors in logic. People don't recognize the way in which they're being manipulated. As Catherine Austin Fitz says, they've spent trillions of dollars learning how to mind control us, and they've done an amazing job. So that's really all I'm talking about, just that. We get to a place where we're not making stuff up in order to deal with a problem that doesn't apply to us.
Right. I always enjoy our discussions, John. Kathy, I want to really thank you for your choice words there in support of the common law tradition there. I appreciated that. I think it's just Kathy, John, and Nikki still here, and I'm about exhausted, John. I enjoy our conversations, but you're a workout for me. And
I know. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Well, it's okay. You know. I do look forward to communicating with you again. Maybe in a broader group, we can have more community consensus building. It's easy for people to get polarized when there's just a couple of people talking, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, it's always a matter of having taking the conversation far enough so that you're not stuck in the misunderstandings.
And especially when one or the other is entrenched in their misunderstanding, and maybe it's me that's entrenched in the misunderstanding, but so far the words that you've chosen haven't been able to make the light bulb go off in my head that I'm goofy.
but you know, maybe with other people in the discussion, huh?
Right. So that's an important thing to do. The way that the dynamic governance deals with that is that you work with it until everybody is able to say, I genuinely understood. So,
well, see, there's two possibilities of problems there. One is like the psychopaths that you talked about. If you're in a communication with a very smooth, slick-talking psychopath, it don't matter how much you work. You're not going to get a consensus with the guy because he's an outright devil worshiper, and he's not going to work with you. And the other is some people are just addicted to their preconceived notions to the points where they simply do not have the mental or spiritual capacity to be objective. Okay? So there's two big categories of people there where frequently people that are blessed with some form of enlightenment just got to call an end to the conversation. Go ahead.
Right, but that's not true of you.
Well, I like to believe that. But one of us is having some serious problems here, there, Brother John.
Right, which can be resolved by going slower and making sure that we've understood each other.
Well, you've done a whole. I dare suggest you've done the majority of the talking here. Right?
I don't disagree.
Okay, well, see. That, to my mind, that means that I'm just thinking that you've got some preconceived notions there that you're enthused about. I don't question your motives, but the consensus building process goes even slower than that.
You go back and forth.
Well, you haven't been doing that, with all due respect, Brother John.
Okay. We'll do better next time.
Yeah. Thank you. And you're graceful, John. You're graceful. You got class about you. And Kathy, again, I want to thank you for your words in support of common law. And Nikki, any final comments or questions from anybody?
No, not for me. It's we're not all skin cells, we're not all muscle cells, we're not all, you know, DNA cells or RNA, you know, we're all different. And there's the seen and the unseen. So it's all the same body, though. So I'm not worried about, you know, the conversation sounded good to me. It's common interest is what's important. We're all in the body together. Let's be nice to each other. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Nikki. I love you.
Yes,
love you
thank
both.
You, Nikki.
Love you both.
All right.
Thanks, everyone. And good night.
Good night, then.